Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Building Wealth section of the Animal Wrap-Up, where today we are going to focus on the news trends and stories that we have gone through in the past two episodes and what that means for you as a wealth builder going into 2024. Specifically, we'll be focusing on where to stash your cash. And I'm joined today by Catherine Austin Fitz and Carolyn Betts online.
And your name is?
And my name is Ricardo Oscar.
Right. And you run the Building Wealth section.
Right.
Okay.
So here we go, off to part section number three.
Okay.
Here we go. So the goal of today is to talk about where you stash your cash in 2024 and the big lessons we learned going through all the news trends and stories in 2023. So Catherine, I'm going to start with you. What did you learn going through the stories? What are the main observations there or lessons learned?
So the news trends and stories every year is a very big deal for me, because we go through the headlines every day and every week with Money and Markets, but quarterly and annually, we do this aggregation. And each time I come in thinking, I know what's going on, you know, I watch the news. And then when you go through the process, the discipline really gets you to relook at everything and you realize, oh, you know, there are these trends that stick out that were more important than I thought, or it's different than what I thought. And this year was the most traumatic yet, because what we realized, we decided pretty early on that we would make Pushback the number one story. But then we started to build the website and we organized all the headlines into different areas of Pushback. And what we realized when we brought it together is you see what you would never see in the corporate media, which is the Pushback is very significant. Right. And it's not just, you know, people gathering in the streets. It's attorney generals and lawyers and going into, you know, and it's very, very significant. And it was very inspiring, too, because you realized, oh, this, you know, 2020, we got whacked. 2021, we realized, wait a minute, something's fishy. 2022, we said we need to take action. So 2023, they file the lawsuits. They, you know, do these various things. They grab the money. They change. But what you realize, it's only just begun, 2024. Right. You know, many people have been worried about, oh, the establishment is going to do a cybersecurity attack or do this frightening thing. No, you've got millions of experienced, talented, professional, capable people pushing back in very dramatic and instrumental ways. And it was very inspiring for me. And what it said to me is this year, we also in the third quarter, we took a hard look at AI. And new tech, you know, we're always looking at new technology. And then in the unanswered questions in part two of News Trends and Stories, we look at, you know, what the new technologies are and what they're doing. What you realize is the extreme risks and opportunities are both increasing. Change is accelerating because they're pushing a reset and things are sort of falling apart or coming together. And technology is throwing lots of stuff up in the air in ways that are highly unpredictable, but change is accelerating. And it's got lots of risks, but it's got lots of opportunities too. And that's what I saw. I saw the opportunities in a way that I hadn't seen during the year.
So just to set the stage, there might be a lot of people who are very familiar with your work and are very familiar with the Solera Report and have a clear feeling of what is going on. But give us the very high over short one paragraph summary for those people that are new to reality and have been living in the official narrative. What are we pushing back against?
So we, you know, every annual wrap up, we have a scenario designed. I'm a great believer. I don't believe in predicting the future. I believe in trying to invent the future, but many different futures are possible. And so we, every year we do a scenario design where we create, we do two axes, so a vertical axis and a horizontal axis, and that produces four scenarios. And if you look at our four scenarios, they're different every year. And the goal is to create lots of different futures so you can plan your world. This year is unique because we see the push for central control through financial transaction control. And if that control happens, then we go into a completely different governance system and world than any of us have ever known. In the vertical axis, it's you have transaction freedom at one end and control at the other end. So, and then on the horizontal axis, you're either in the going direct reset, which is the central bankers reset, or the building wealth reset.
Right.
which we've decided to put you in charge of.
Right. And the central premise of today will be that it's not just about pushing back against that which you don't want to see manifested in the world, but being for something, which is back to the building wealth.
So you want to, yes, you want to make sure that you preserve financial transaction freedom. Right. But that's not enough. You have to do something useful. And the challenge of the current system is it's not productive. It's not economically productive. It's not culturally productive. It's not humanly productive. So I used to have a deputy when I worked in the federal government who'd say, in the destruction of the old, let there be the creation of the new. As we stop the push for financial transaction control, we have to still do a reset, but we want a reset that ends up in a human civilization instead of in, you know, some Orwellian nightmare.
Right.
What I had an observation too. The thing that struck me was how international this is. There were just so many, there was a lot of pushback from other countries than the United States. And we tend to see things here in terms of the United States all the time. And it does appear that the United States is way out front in imposing all of these controls. But the other thing that I notice is that in the United States, we have our Constitution allows us to have state control of everything that's not specifically given to the federal government. And that's not the case in Europe. So when we get questions a lot of times about how do I employ these techniques in my country, sometimes there's some impediments that we don't have in this country. And that really makes me appreciate the value of our Constitution. But pushback is international.
Right. You have the worst perpetrators being the United States that is working internationally, because they're engineering through international organizations, but the greatest pushback is domestic. So the United States is sort of the worst part on both sides.
Right. So we're doing this interview from the Netherlands, and here it's very different. Mm-hmm. The Netherlands, you could say, reports to the European Union, whereas in the United States, it's sort of the other way around, where the federal government should report to the state by constitutional right.
Right.
So that's a very optimistic view for the pushback, which we'll get to in a second. Before we jump in, let's set the stage with how we will approach going through the six pillars.
Okay.
So we'll take the six pillars as our framework for today, as a skeleton for this talk. And what we're going to do is first start off with a couple principles, how to look at these pillars and how to think about where to stash your cash in regards to that specific pillar. Then we're going to go through a couple stories out of your extensive experiences working with clients and working through litigation and what works and what definitely doesn't work, the do's and don'ts, the stories that have cost people a lot of money or have made them a lot of money.
Right.
So we're going to talk about those. And then we end after that with actual places you could stash that hard-earned cash.
Right. And I just want to say we always look at wealth on an integrated basis between living equity and financial equity. And what you'll see in the kind of world we're in, much of the loss of financial wealth comes from mistakes on the living equity side. So, you know, Toby Rogers just had that recent Substack where he describes family wealth being destroyed because the family's being poisoned and the healthcare system basically churns them in a very bad way and ends up draining all their wealth, and they end up not healthy and all their family wealth gone. And so, you know, so there is very tight relationship between how you handle your living equity and how you handle your financial equity, how it's not just your money, how you handle your time.
Exactly.
So there's a very tight integration, and we talk about these things in a very integrated way.
Right. It's time to stop thinking about your investment portfolio as something out there, which is isolated.
Right.
And the family on the other side, or the ecosystem around you on the other side, it's all integrated.
There is, in most people, I find, particularly in America, there is profound disassociation between family wealth, you know, financial wealth, and living equity. Right. And there's no... When it comes to financial planning, they're not integrated in a way that protects family wealth.
Right.
And food is particularly important in this respect, too. And I guess that comes under living equity. And I mean, it costs money, but, you know, your selections and your choices are important.
Well, one of the stories I told, so Ricardo and I spent the last 2 days with me just downloading every story of whether clients or subscribers, how they made money or lost money. And one of the stories I tell is I can't tell you how many millionaires have insisted to me that they cannot afford biodynamic or organic or local fresh food. And it's very interesting because when you come to Europe, Europeans spend significantly more on food and significantly less on healthcare. Right. Americans spend significantly less on food and significantly more on healthcare. And there is an absolute connection.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So, and it puts you constantly on the back foot, going from this doctor to the next, from this pill to the next.
Right.
You want to get out of that treadmill. So I would say that's a brilliant segue into the first pillar, which is your free and inspired life, which definitely does not include you being sick. It definitely does not include you being sick, because when you're sick, you're not productive. You're not able to think straight. You're not able to do the things you would like to do in life. You're not able to pick up your children, your grandchildren. Or you're not able to do all of the fun stuff. So this has to start with your vision of a free and inspired life.
Right.
And I want to stress it's your vision, it's your unique circumstances, is what you envision your family, your business should look like, and how all of that supports each other.
Right.
That's where you need to start, and it's you choosing to do so. It's not somebody else doing this for you. You have to do the grunt work. You have to do the heavy lifting. But it's important you realize that you have the power to do so. So
see, it's part of it's choice, but part of it is intention. You have to create that intention every day.
Right.
So I don't know if you remember, Carolyn, when we finished the litigation and several people close to me and my family or that I was working with said, okay, well, you now have enough money to protect yourself for the rest of your life. You need to live a quiet life because your career is over. I said, no, I'm going to take all the money. I'm going to bonus a lot out to the people who helped me, and I'm going to start a business. A business will be very successful. And they got very upset and angry with me because they said, no, you don't understand. You're a failure. It's over. That's it.
Well, and really, I think the goals of some financial planners are basically how to hoard money. And it's not about hoarding your money.
Well, every dime you have into financing the deep state.
And getting a fee for managing it, too. I mean, if you spend money on food and wells on your property, you're not that decreases the amount of money there is to apply a fee to.
Exactly.
but I think the whole system is designed to fuel corporate, you know, investing in the big banks and corporations.
Yes.
So it's basically a giant sucking sound. And I've seen, you know, I'm skipping ahead, but I can't tell you how many clients I said, whose financial advisors, there must be a program somewhere that says this, unless you have $25 million essentially in brokerage accounts and securities, you are not secure. So, and what they would do is they can't afford, you know, fresh food, and they would absolutely strip their family of what they needed in terms of education or different kinds of investment because their financial planner said they only had $10 million. And so they were really in a very insecure position. And it was incredible because if you looked at you're basically strip mining the family to finance, you know, the deep state.
And the other thing is that the financial planners are helping people plan for long-term healthcare expenses. And so there's all these trusts and all these vehicles to finance you going on Medicaid or spending down your assets or hiding your assets from the spend down provisions rather than talking about avoiding going into long-term care.
Yep. So this has to start with your vision of not ending up on a surgery table or you're in a nursing home getting clocked by the pharmaceutical company.
You're choosing to live a free and inspired life, but taking responsibility to realize not only do you, you know, are you responsible to achieve that in the environment in which you're in, but unfortunately, as we said many times, you know, there's a difference between a strategy in wartime and a strategy in peacetime. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, one of the shows I did recently, the headline was, somebody's trying to kill you. Your job is not to let them.
Okay, so, right. Doesn't get more clear than that.
Right. Yeah. So unfortunately, I don't like it, but it is what it is. You're in wartime. So you want to live a free and inspired life in wartime. And what that means is you need to have, you know, not just an offense, but a defense.
Right. So on the offense, tell us about what you told me this afternoon about how to be successful in business.
What did I tell you this afternoon?
How to be successful in business, the electricity that feeds your
So the key to business, whenever you start a business, and I've started several, but whenever you start a business, you need a high learning speed that gets you to the point where you can truly add value to the customer. You can add more value to them than they pay you.
Right.
And that takes a very high continuous learning and improvement speed. And usually it takes a while to get up the S curve, mm-hmm. you know, and I usually find it's 3 to 5 years to really get up that S curve in a powerful way. And what's amazing is if you see the people who do it the fastest and the best, it's because they have a passion for what they do. And you look at these businesses that you would never do in a million years, and you can't imagine anybody can succeed or make money at them. But what you realize is that person has an unbelievable passion for, doing whatever that thing is, you know. And you know, I used to have a wonderful friend who had a business that was a cleaning business. And she loved to clean. Mm-hmm. And she spent her whole life learning to be the best cleaner. She did the cleaning for the stars in New York, you know, so big famous people got her. And she was amazing. She was just amazing. But her continuous learning on cleaning, every time I saw her, she was learning something new about, you know, all different, you know, and she was constantly, right. It was difficult to get her off the topic. But anyway, so you want to, this is why you want to do, you know, not what pleases your parents. You want to do what you have a passion for.
So that takes us to Wim Hof.
Right.
He is one of our heroes. In fact, he was Hero of the Year on the Solera Report.
Uh-huh.
And if you look at a guy like that who's built a tremendous operation, a big business, a very successful business all the way across the world in doing breath work,
right,
putting people into icy cold water and having them focus on mindset and do incredible things they could never fathom they could do.
Right.
All three of those are things where if you would ask any person who went to business school, they would say, that's never going to be economic.
Just right.
Do that as a side project, as a hobby, but don't make it your business. But this guy has done it.
Right.
Why has he succeeded?
Well, first of all, Wim Hof, you know, he wasn't trying to start a business. He was trying to heal himself. So then he figured out how to heal himself, and he tested it on his set. You know, he was the guinea pig, and it worked. And when you look at it, everything he's advising you to do is something you could do for free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no need for you to buy anything. Now, people pay for his books and workshops because it's more fun to do it, you know,
yes.
with his help. But he then started to help heal other people. And it spread virally because it worked. I mean, that was, you know, it sold because the effect was real. For very low cost, a serious investment of time and intention, people could get well from things where it's impossible.
Yes.
And then, you know, then it grew and grew and grew. And finally, his kids, you know, he has 4 or 5 kids, they came into the business, and his son, who runs the business, got him to take the time to go sit down with doctors and scientists and prove. And literally, they're having
build credibility.
Right. They're having to rewrite the medical books because he's changing.
Isn't
you know,
that
he's proving that his method is right and the science in the books is wrong.
Yep.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And anyway, but he also, the thing that is so amazing about Wim is he absolutely, he loves to heal people. He loves mm-hmm. to help them. He loves it. And it's
authentic. It's real.
He gets a kick out of showing people. Mm-hmm. He believes everybody can be healthy. Everybody can really enjoy their life, no matter how bad mm-hmm. things are. And these are methods you can do anywhere in the world. And of course, they're all free.
Yep.
And it's his passion that, and his authenticity, you know, and the fact that it really does work. So, I mean, the combination is infectious.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. You really do get high in your own supply.
Funny. Last year, at the end of the year, we offered to send, 100 books. Mm-hmm. And we ended up sending a couple hundred because so many people. But what we said is, if you've been hurt by COVID, we think this could help. We will send you a free mm-hmm. copy of the book. Just our expression of wanting to help you. You know, we want you to be successful.
Right.
And I'm a great believer, if you take a bad whack, you have to get back up and keep going. And so this was a way of of helping them do that. And people would send us stories that when you read the stories, Ricardo, you just wanted to cry because it was what had happened to them during the pandemic was so hard. They lost their business. They lost their family. They lost, you know, I mean, it was just horrible. Anyway, so they would get Wim Hof, and then, you know, 6 months later, you would get these emails. I got the Wim Hof book, and here's what had happened. And it's amazing. Right. You know, it was very, you know, we still sometimes get those emails. And anyway, but that's, you know, Wim Hof is a virus, and it's viral.
It's a virus we would love to spread.
Yeah,
it's a good one. And imagine that a $20 book can radically change your life. You're in the doctor's seat now.
Yeah, so we had another one this year, was the interview with Farrell, and then the Robert Temple's book, A New Science of Heaven, which we can talk and we'll talk about later. But that was a perfect example of learning. You know, I would say Wim Hof offers you intelligence. You know, Farrell and Temple offer you intelligence about how the world works that significantly helps you choose and take responsibility and build intention. And we're, you know, humans are powerful, but it's easy to look around the world and be distracted or knocked off of your intention and your choice.
Or isolated from other people. We're more, way more powerful when we're collected.
Right.
When everybody's together, conspiring together,
right,
working together and effectively communicating together.
Right. There's a total effort to brainwash in us into behavior patterns or mental patterns that make us lose that.
Right. So tell us about the indoctrinated brain, because that goes into that extensively, right?
Have you listened to Indoctrinated Brain yet, Carolyn?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Ulrich Groniger just had Michael Nels on for Future Science, and he's a German scientist. Very impressive credentials. Who was an expert in Alzheimer's and was watching the way people were behaving in the pandemic. Something's really wrong. And so he's been digging in and finding, trying to figure out the science of how our minds are being influenced and manipulated. And it's a real major contribution. And as you know, in the Solari Report, we have a lot on mind control. Mm-hmm. We're very concerned about it, because if you're going to live a free and inspired life, the first thing you need is
a free mind.
Is a grounded, you know, healthy, free mind supported by a healthy body that supports a healthy mind. So there's a relationship.
Right.
It makes you wonder whether Mr. Global was mastering how the hippocampus works.
Absolutely.
It almost seems like it was a plan to attack your hippocampus, which is the part of your brain that stores information that you can apply at, you know, after sleeping and getting your new synapses, you know, allows you to take what you learned today and apply it tomorrow.
So it was very interesting when we went through all the stories we went through. I don't know, 50 stories of how people lost money or made money, and, you know, sort of what works and what doesn't. What kept coming up again and again and again is people being tricked into a state of fear and then doing something that worked against their best interest. And one of the things he focuses on is how much fear, you know, the role of fear in doing things that cause you to lose the capacity to think clearly.
Right. And now is the perfect time, with all the New Year's resolutions and the year ahead of us, to sit down and go into that, I think he calls it type two thinking or zone two thinking.
Right.
Where you think slow.
Right.
You're out of that emotional fear state and you are in a state where you're able to think clearly and assess things objectively.
Right.
Rationally.
Right.
And this is the perfect time to do that.
Right.
All right. You want to go through the next couple of stories?
Yeah.
Before we go to, in terms of timing, that still makes sense, right?
Yeah, let's just do it.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, fantastic. Now, for every Wim Hof in the world, there is a counterbalancing, not so much hero of the world, that is definitely not living a free and inspired life, but quite the opposite.
Darth Vader.
For example, now give us, when you and I prepared this talk, you and I were talking about some of the Darth Vaders of the world and people who are obviously not living a free and inspired life.
Right. So we had it. Well, they're living a high and inspired life.
Right.
At our expense. But two of the people who got absolutely clocked in the pushback story was Mark Carney. Mark Carney has a net zero alliance, which is part of, just give us 150 trillion and we'll fix climate change. No problem. As long as we control all the money in the world. And we saw Vanguard drop and then Lloyds of London and then a bunch of insurance companies dropped and Mark Carney got his head handed to him because reality interceded.
Yeah. Right. As well as state pension funds unwinding the ESG narrative.
Right. So the state treasurers, state pension funds, the state treasurers all push back on ESG because the way it's being weaponized, it slammed into reality. Including the fact that the economy is highly dependent on oil and gas.
Right.
And the idea that you're going to get states that are highly, that are major oil and gas producers to basically dramatically raise the cost of capital to their oil and gas operations.
It's schizophrenic.
Right. Schizophrenic. And so you saw a lot of what's been promoted that is intellectually bankrupt connected to financial matters. Mm-hmm. You saw those guys get their heads handed to them.
Right.
It was very inspiring.
Right. It kind of, back to the indoctrinated brain, makes you think, how are these people's brains functioning? If they can do all the schizophrenic things with a straight face, your hippocampus has to be completely dysfunctional.
The shocking thing about working in Washington, what I did, is you really got to see people who knew they were paid to lie. And it was part of what I call the red button story. But you watched people who were great at lying. Mm-hmm. And, so you would have a situation like I don't know if you remember the attack on the Waco compound where, lots of children and people were killed by the feds just in cold blood. And, and to sort of get away with it, lots of lies were told, but you would see the attorney general get up and just tell complete lies. And I would watch them and I'd say, wow, they're so good. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. A lot of them are paid to act. Right. And it's by working in Washington and seeing what's happening with the money and what's really going on and then what they say on TV and how they lie, you get a real picture of, of the bifurcation. But it hasn't been until the pandemic when people finally realized that that you had leaders and this many political leaders who just, they lie well.
Well, part of the problem for Mr. Global and his lieutenants is you can get away with a lie on when you tell it, but when a year later or 2 years later, when people play what you said, it can be shown to be complete lie, and you've probably said the exact opposite on tape, on a recording also, and they can do document. There are a lot of documentaries, and a lot of the pushback is just playing what people said. And what happens is you remember when they said it, and maybe it made sense at the time, maybe it didn't, but then you see it in hindsight, and you start to really get, oh my God, they were lying. Like, they knew they were lying. They weren't making a mistake. They were lying.
Yes. Right. So the tactic that our prime minister, our former prime minister in the Netherlands uses is he will say, I have no active recollection of that. That is literally the tactic. So there's a, let me just stay on this for a minute, Catherine, because there's a lot of people that are obviously doing malevolent things consciously.
Right.
They know they're lying. They know it's malevolent. They're hurting people.
Right.
And they still, for whatever reason, go ahead with it. Right. Whether they're being pressured or they think it's the right thing.
Well, they're being incentivized through their psychopaths.
Exactly. Right. But then there's a whole layer of people that think they do good, but in fact are doing more hurt. So I imagine there's a lot of people, for example, state of Oklahoma rewinding the ESG narrative. Some people who were initially involved with that, doing business with the big Black Rocks, Vanguards of the world, responsible for pushing the green button and going right ahead with that trade, thought they were doing the right thing for the state.
A lot of the people who first developed ESG knew it could be really good. And the problem was it was weaponized. So you had all these people who got in it, and then it's weaponized, and they're sitting in the middle of it. And it's like, what happened?
So that takes us to pillar number two, which is having the right navigation tools. If you're operating with the wrong map, you're going to make the wrong decisions.
Right. But let me add one thing before we go to pillar two. And that is, if you're going to have a free and inspired life, then you want to be with other people who plan on having a free and inspired life. This is an environment where it's impossible to do things alone. It's extremely difficult to do things alone. You want to be really good at collaborating, but you want to be really good at attracting other people who want to live a free and inspired life, who will make a choice, who will take responsibility, and will understand. Because if I want to have a free and inspired life, the only way I can do it is to help others do the same. So you want to be gathered up and grouped up and networked with people who understand they have a responsibility to help others have a free and inspired life if they're going to have one. And that's critical. And every time you allow somebody in your life who doesn't fit that profile,
boot them out.
You got to drain.
Yeah. Right. So it's imperative you do your strategic planning for the year ahead with your family members, with your friends, with your business partners, and all get on the bandwagon.
Right. Remember I told you one of the most important things you needed to do was do a calendar for the year with your wife.
Exactly. Yes.
And agree all the way. Here are all the events that are going to happen. Here are all the anniversaries. Here are all the birthdays. Here are all the things, you know, that we are pre-scheduled on this year that we want to do. That's our time. How are we going to organize and manage our time so together we have a free and inspired life?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Pillar number two, navigation.
Pillar number two, navigation tools. So having the wrong map obviously can lead to a lot of wrong decision making.
Right.
It doesn't have to necessarily be something you believe is bad, because you might falsely believe that it's the right thing to do and it's going to help a lot of people. You just have to wrong
when that. When I ran Hamilton Securities, I built this whole company, very successful. I believed that I had official approval to do what I was doing. I was prototyping and trying to figure out how to, you know, do the building wealth reset at the local level. And I thought I had their approval, and that if I was off sides, they would let me know.
Yes.
Okay. One mistake, one bad map, wiped out the whole company, all the employment, 11 years in litigation, because I had a bad map. My bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So let's help people get the right map.
Right.
Going into 2024, you just alluded at the start of the conversation to the big four scenarios.
Right.
Let's drill down and let's give it some color.
Okay.
So right before this talk, we came up with a couple pop culture references from some of our favorite or not so favorite movies that really bring home the message.
Yeah.
So let's start with
the quadrants.
Yes. Let's start with the quadrants, and we'll start with the negative, so we end on the positive going into 2024.
Our two axes are transactions. Are they free? Are they controlled? And then is the going direct reset the ones the central bankers want that move us to complete control, or the one we want, which is building wealth reset that dramatically decentralizes power and money, but in a way that builds wealth and you end up in a human civilization. One believes in the rule of law, the other believes in the rule of just us. Okay, so what we decided was, the total control and the going direct reset. So the central bankers get their way.
It's the worst of both.
Yeah. So we started calling it slavery, but now we're calling it animal farm.
Right.
Which is probably more important. We decided we use pop culture. So
where obviously some pigs are more
powerful than
others.
Yeah. So let's say they don't get total control and transactions stay free. We're in, but they're doing the going direct. We're in Dune. So they haven't gotten total control, and, you know, the Freemans are living under the sand, but This is a high friction. We call this friction. Right. It's a high friction environment to stay free in.
And there's a lot of government involvement in those markets.
Right. Okay. So if you go to free markets in the building wealth reset, we call that, at first we call that freedom. Now we're calling it Braveheart. So
yes,
the freedom team wins and it's pretty wonderful. And then the building wealth reset happens, but they get total control. So that is, it's 2030. You have no assets and you're happy.
But you're happy.
So I called it mind control. But the first thing you said when you saw it is, why is this mind control? And the first thing Carolyn said when she said, why is this mind control? And then we decided we'd call it the Truman Show.
That's right.
Because you think you're building wealth, but you're not. You know, Microsoft is running all the systems and Google's running all the systems and Gmail is scarfing up all the information and, you know, you're in the Truman Show, but you think you're happy.
You have no assets, but still you're happy.
Well, the other thing is that you could be a lieutenant of Mr. Global and take all the money that you're paid off. And you could have a whole lot of money and think that you're happy, but you're a lieutenant of Mr. Global.
And there is a spiritual price there.
Right.
Right. So this is our framework going into the new year. And going into the new year and looking back at the past, what you do with the news, trends, and stories is you isolate the ones, those trends, those stories that are most pivotal for what's going on. They capture the big trends and help you get out of the day-to-day noise.
Right.
That's where I extract a lot of value from. It is I go through them and I have a sense of what's going on the bigger trend level.
Right.
And that drags me out of the noise and gives me a framework. Going
you
into,
understand the primary trends.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes. Right. And then going into 2024, you can then schedule your investment portfolio or your scenario planning on family level or where you want to invest with your business and make capital investments based on those primary trends and not on what's going on day to day or week to week.
Right. So what we're going to come back to when we talk through the stories again and again and again, you know, so I said continuous improvement to get to the up the S curve on a business. What we're going to come back to again and again is that success depends on high learning speeds and having a good learning plan. So you've built a learning plan for building wealth. Having a good learning plan and investing your time in learning is absolutely critical to being successful in this environment as change accelerates. And you can't determine where to invest your time smartly unless you understand the trends.
Exactly.
Right.
The other aspect of mapping is your actual physical location. And when you look at the news, trends, and stories, you can see that very different things are happening in California than in Tennessee, Florida, and Texas. And, you know, some, you know, there's no perfect place, although I'm sure Catherine would say Tennessee's a perfect place. But where you are physically makes a big difference in how you build wealth. And what you, how you plan for the future. I mean, maybe the answer is get the hell out of here.
Right. But jurisdiction matters. Jurisdiction matters. Exactly. And your jurisdiction has profound influence on your strategies. Right.
Which is why the three of us are unable to tell anybody who's listening to this exactly what they need to do.
Right.
They need to decide for themselves. And we can only help them with these tools or with giving them the right intelligence to be able to assess that for themselves and make that judgment about their jurisdiction, their family, their business, their whole ecosystem, what the right thing for them is to do.
Right.
Yeah, we get a lot of questions. Should I sell my house? Should I sell my business? Ask a realtor. Ask a realtor that question and don't tell them where your house is. They can't tell you. It completely depends upon your market.
So your circumstances are indeed unique. And you need to do the hard work, put in the hours to learn and create a better map and do it systematically so you don't waste time reading all sorts of noise and false realities. And
right. But I do believe in paying a lot of money to get intelligence from experts.
I agree.
So, and, you know, historically I have done that and it saved my bacon so many times.
But you need to make sure that the experts are basing their expertise on your situation rather than what comes down from their central office in New York.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? that they're cooked into the tools of understanding the environment in your state and your municipality or county.
Or building a library with physical books. I can't tell you how frequently there's another book on my doorstep and my wife's like, oh, this one's for you. Another book? But you just got 5 books this week. I can't tell you how frequently that happens. Okay, so this is for all the marbles. There's no middle of the road.
Right.
You alluded in the start of this talk about the fact that there is a diversion. What do you like
right.
or not?
So 10 or 20 years ago when you did an investment plan, you know, most people wanted to stay in the middle of the road and make sure that they couldn't get clocked. Mm-hmm. Now you've got to choose slavery or freedom.
Yep.
And now this fight is for all the marbles. Yes. And so, you know, you could say, well, fighting for freedom is too risky. I don't want to do it. I would say, well, then you have 100% chance of being a slave. So you might as well,
yes.
you know.
That's the status quo.
Right.
This is real. This is happening.
Right. Right. And there are consequences. If you're me and you believe you have a soul, there are consequences to helping right. Mr. Global engineer slavery.
Right. Too.
Well, and you know, we get a lot of questions of what happens if things collapse. And what the people asking that don't understand is you're in the middle of it.
Yes. You're in a collapse.
Way out there. We're in the middle of it.
Right. That's one of the funny things we deal with a lot is the idea that this is coming. It's like, what about what's going on now? It's really funny because I remember in 2001 in the county seat in Hardeman County where I live in Hickory Valley, they created a space on the municipal land for people to have sales out of the back of their cars because they couldn't have yard sales because they didn't have homes. So they literally created a place where you could have car sales so that people could sell their possessions out of the back of their cars.
Wow.
That was 2000, 2001.
Wow.
Right.
So there's always opportunities, is what you're saying. There's always right. opportunities to do something productive.
Right. Always. Right. Always, always.
But Carolyn, what keeps you motivated to be on this side and not stick your head in the sand and say, ah, it's collapsing and all hope's gone out of the window?
You know, I saw an interview where I didn't agree with a lot of what the person being interviewed was saying, but he made an observation at the end of the interview that Mr. Global was creating a dream team, and that all the people who had left the old way, the official reality, the you know, the medical jobs, the things that required them to get jabbed, all of those people are now together fighting, and that it's a dream team. So for me, what's inspiring is to be part of and meet other members of the dream team. And it is so much more inspiring than being with my family and my old friends who are not there yet. You know, I mean, it's just wonderful. There's travel, there's lots of communication, sharing of information, thinking about things together.
They're so smart.
Yep. So that's what's inspiring to me.
They're just, you know, they believe they can invent their life. They can invent their world. They
exactly.
Huge choice.
And they choose to do so yeah. consciously.
Right.
These are people that wake up every day and choose to do this.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to McCullough's new book. It's about choice. And one of the things he talks about is you have to trust yourself. You choose, but you have to, and you take responsibility, you have to trust mm-hmm. yourself. And so that's one of the things I notice about the Dream Team. They really, you know, they trust, they listen to other people, they collaborate, but they trust themselves.
Story number one
yeah.
is the fear porn, is people buying into that. So you
right.
have to choose for yourself or get sucked
so
into the
one
fear
of the
porn.
Things I say is never make a major investment of time and money if somebody's putting you into fear. If somebody's putting you into fear, if you feel fear, something's wrong. Don't do it. You know, go outside, talk to a tree, you know, talk to your dog, do something. Get away from the screen, get away from a smartphone. If you're in fear, something's wrong, and don't do it. One of the things Carol and I have fought with for the last 2 years is somebody gets put into fear. The next thing they do is they take their money out of the securities market and on the theory that they're getting away from the bad guy, and they proceed to put money into an IRA with precious metals where they pay double market.
Exactly.
And literally overnight, half of their savings is gone. They have basically, you know, because they bought into a precious metal scam. It was funny. I just did a radio show this week of a show I've done for years. I forgot to check their website before I did it. You know, I'm so used to doing the show. And what did they have? They had a brand new sponsor all over the website, you know, multiple places selling numismatic coins. I thought, oh, God, you know, and there you go again. But that's a way, you know, but they're able to talk people into those things because they say, oh, the government confiscated gold. And if you buy numismatics, they won't, you know, and they've got this whole riff. And so please don't. Now, there are lots of great precious metals investments you can make from honest dealers. But what you'll see is these things, the ones that really focus and run fear, you know, those are the ones where you get scammed. And we've been able to help a couple subscribers unwind when we found out about it and get some or all of their money back. But it's a huge, frightening experience. And it happens because they put you in fear. And that's why this book by Michael Neils is so interesting, because it shows you scientifically what the fear does and how it interferes with your mind.
Yes. That is such an important point, is that when you make those decisions to invest into assets such as precious metals or think about your mortgage or big things like that, big decisions, you don't do it in a state of fear.
Well, but here's the thing. You also don't do it on impulse with systems, you know, smartphones, TV, you know, internet, computers, anything that could, telephones, they can do entrainment over the phone.
Having just listened to a podcast that tells you that the markets are going to collapse, it's all.
Right. And so I saw people lose millions and millions of dollars buying into the collapse prophecy. Mm-hmm. And of course, one of my favorite stories is we're going to talk about this under risk, but I had a former client who was a millionaire, and he called me and he said, I have $70,000 of credit card debt. What do I do? I said, $70,000 of credit card debt. And he said, well, I knew the dollar was going to collapse. And when the financial system collapsed, you know, he'd been listening to all these internet guys on the dollar collapse. This is about, I don't know, 2008, 2009. He said, when it all collapses, then I won't be liable for the debt because all those institutions will have collapsed. I won't have to pay it back. So what they're telling everybody is run up your credit card and then just walk away. And he said, so what do I do? I said, you pay your credit card bill. And he said, but it's like $30,000 of fees. I said, right, because you're an idiot. So that's an idiot tax. You get to pay it. And I said, you know, hire a lawyer and try and negotiate, see if they'll cut a deal with you. But, you know, you have absolutely no leverage and you have no excuse. So.
And the other thing is people are getting involved in schemes to where they think that they don't like the way their tax money's being spent. And they're going into these schemes where they're not paying their tax liabilities. And under the theory, you know, that they're, I don't know, not part of the corporate thing. And they take these legal positions that basically are going to mean that the IRS comes after them eventually, and they won't have any freedom whatsoever in the expenditure of their money until they get it all paid off. And you can collect a pretty big tax bill over a 10 or 20 year period.
Well, not only that, if you look what they do with fees and interest, they're really going to nail you.
Oh yeah.
I mean, one of the reasons I would never do it is I want to be free. So I don't want to give those guys leverage. You know, one of the things we've talked about is the get rich quick schemes.
Yes.
Oh, they're so frustrating.
So one tactic is fear.
Right, fear.
And now we're here to save you. So there's this big bully, but here I am with my company, and I will never do that to you. So just invest in that's a fear scheme. The second one
is get rich quick. And the get rich quick works. It really does. And one of the places I used to see it is, I have it on inside information. I'm in the in club. I have it on inside
information. Friend of a friend told me.
A friend of a friend. I had lunch with a billionaire, yeah. And I have it on inside information. And you just can't believe how it works. And it was funny because I had a client who'd been in Madoff and lost almost everything with Madoff and then made it back. They were very talented. They made it back. But they kept looking for the inside deal, and they get hooked every time. And so...
Right. When you get above market interest rates or returns that just don't make sense, projections, it's you have to scratch your and just think very critically.
So I used to get clients coming in who had put big money in these magical deals with above market rates, and you would try and get them out of it. And sure enough, it would almost always turn out to be a nightmare.
The other case is where the get-rich-quick scheme does seem to work for a period of time.
Right. So you have a speculative market.
Exactly.
Right. And it's been very interesting because, as you know, we've been very involved in commenting on the crypto and Bitcoin market as it gets pumped and dumped and pumped and dumped. And when you have a speculative market, particularly one that's subject to tremendous pumps and dumps, like penny stocks, it's not just crypto. There's a way to play a speculative market. So when you work on Wall Street, you get a lot of training on how to play a speculative market. How it works, what to do, how to manage it. And I've seen people, we've had a couple subscribers who are highly educated about speculative markets and have been phenomenally disciplined about playing Bitcoin. And they've made a lot of money. So we had one guy who basically was in the employment treadmill, but he wanted to make a lot of money and get his family out of the city and into a homesteading situation, good land. So he understood the environment. And he did a great and disciplined job of doing it. It was very, very astute. But he did his homework and he worked hard and he researched it. And then as soon as he could cash out, he cashed out early because he knew. And he cashed out and sure enough.
And kept records.
And kept all his records, great archive, and got out of town. And so, if you're going to play in a speculative market, there's a way to do it, but it requires great hard work and discipline. And you can't get into the emotional passion of it. There's a wonderful book by James Monier called Behavioral Investing. And it talks about all the mistakes people make because they get emotionally involved. And we've seen that with Bitcoin, of people thinking they don't have to pay their taxes. It's secret. They don't have to keep records. They can live off of borrowing money against their position because it's always going to go up. There's mistake after mistake after making. So they don't know how to manage and play a speculative market.
Well, and there's also a myth, since we're on the subject of crypto, a myth that somehow the government can't seize things that you have, assets that you have in crypto. And somehow that's a way to hide money. And the fact is, maybe early on, they might have thought that that was the case because, things were brand new and it was a new thing. But understand that the CIA and the NSA and the whole shebang, they know everything that you do.
Right.
Understand, they know everything you do. And we can intellectually say, oh, yeah, I know that. And Facebook and, they're all tracking my data, but I can hide something somewhere. And the fact is, you can't hide. You can't beat the system by hiding or hoarding or, there's no way, as you've said, Catherine.
So these schemes are laden with huge promises about privacy, but also about returns, where people are getting trained to believe, and I truly believe that they're getting trained into believing that doubling your money every year is normal. And if it's not, then it's a boring investment opportunity. So if you talk to people who have just made a lot of money, maybe by accident, maybe by strategy, in one of these schemes, and you talk to them about investing in stocks, for example, and making 7% in the long run on average.
It's not attractive.
7%. But in this thing, it's promised to take off and go to the moon and make 500% a year.
Right. Right. So Carolyn brings up the danger of the systems, whether it's mind control or surveillance. I told you the story as a wonderful subscriber who wrote me, and he said, "Now, don't get mad, because you're going to get mad at me." He said, "But I think other subscribers need to know about this. I'd been warning about a precious metals dealer who was really charging people way above market and really scamming them. And I had, you know, been very careful to warn everybody. And anyway, but this was a very astute guy and an astute investor. And he said, but that precious metals dealer offered a brochure that I really wanted, but you had to give them your email and phone number." He said, "I know, don't get mad. I know I shouldn't have done it." And he said, "But I was driving from California across country, and I just happened to pass by on the highway where their office was. And they magically just happened to call me on my cell phone because they had my number. I'd given it to them for the brochure." Now, when you're under surveillance and a firm is working with the parties that have those databases, I call it the data beast, you know, they know you're driving by. And of course, the immediate thing was, "What a coincidence. You just happened to be driving by. Why don't you come into the office?" He knew, of course, that it was dangerous and not to do it. He said, whatever they were using on the phone, and I'm sure it was entrainment, it made him feel really good. But he knew. So he said, "Thank you very much. This is why I subscribe to the Salyer Report." Right. But
surely he wasn't important enough to be monitored, right?
Yes, he was.
Right.
And this is the key. One of the things he understood about the system is there's no such thing as being unimportant. Everybody, you know, a scam can extract value from everybody and anybody.
Yes.
And he knew everybody's on the menu. So we've been talking about recently how the great taking has persuaded a lot of wealthy people who didn't know they were on the menu to understand they were. Everyone's on the menu. There is no such thing as being unimportant. Everybody's important when it comes to extracting value.
Right. This is not the DDR with the Lives of Others movie. That's Leben der Anderen. This is not
right. Right.
There's a Stasi agent for everybody, and it's called AI.
There's thousands of... I mean, one of the things that really struck me when we talked with Whitney Webb about AI is how many Stasi, you know, in the digital world, we're going to have thousands of digital, you know, bots on us trying to extract value. And how do you stay sane when you have that kind of, because you're not only talking about trying to play you in a variety of ways, you're talking about trying to influence your mind in a variety of ways. And staying coherent, staying clear is a real challenge.
Right.
So
let's talk about investments.
Okay.
Where do we put that hard-earned cash in 2024 in ways that help us build a better map? Where do we put it?
So there are a whole series of things, and they start with your time. They start with saying, okay, I'm going to, and that's why I would do a learning plan. I would get the building wealth learning plan, and I would say, how much time can I invest in learning? And then where can I start to learn in a way that's really going to help me with my business, with my skills, with my products and services, with my investment portfolio, with my, you know, building more resilient lifestyle, do it yourself, you know. I mean, there are many, many different ways of doing it, but you've got to up your game in terms of continuous learning. The second thing is, you know, and we run into this all the time, I pay a fortune for intelligence. And so I buy books. I subscribe to all sorts of magazines and services. I invest in sort of network that makes me smart and that I, you know, I spend time sending them stuff. They send time. And then I have experts. I have a great attorney.
Yes.
Right. And one of the things I think it's fair to say, Carolyn, you've seen all along, you know, I said, I've got to have a great CPA and I've got to have a great attorney. And I would do anything I could proactively to keep those people in my life and stay connected. And partly because they're giving me great intelligence, but I can also prove intention.
Right.
So if there's a mistake on my taxes, I can prove that I gave everything to the CPA. I gave them instructions to be absolutely compliant. And if there was a mistake, it was an honest mistake and I can prove it because they can, they can be my witness. So part of it is having people around you who make you really, really intelligent. So we know we have one contact who I refer to. Sherlock Holmes had a brother, and when he got stuck, he would go to the club and talk to Mycroft.
Yes.
So I have a Mycroft, right?
Oh, yes. You know, he's wicked smart.
And he's wicked.
I will tell you that. He's wicked smart.
So when I get stuck, I go to Mycroft and it's like, now, I don't know how I would live with that. I mean, it's also the most wonderful person.
Right. And he lives all the way across different sides.
We're not going to say where he is.
We're not going to tell where, but
he's not in Antarctica, but he's far away.
Right. He's very far away. So whenever I talk to him on the phone, I usually tell about things that are happening in the Netherlands, and he tells me about things that are happening over there. And he helps me see the things that I could never envision.
Right.
Are happening.
Right.
And that's really worth your time, is talking to people that can help you do that.
Right. You want people in every area that you need knowledge in. You want really excellent people that you can go to.
Right.
And the beauty of what has happened to Carolyn and me and the Solari team is over many, many years, you know, we've been on a search for the truth.
Yes.
And we've bumped into and networked with what is now the Dream Team. And they, you know, for every topic we reach out, with rare exception, and there's someone, you know, we're still looking for someone on UCC, but other than UCC.
But these are people that are high integrity, they're wicked smart, and they're fun to hang around with.
They're so fun.
So it's back to, you know, you have to make your choice about your free and inspired life, and part of that is who you surround yourself with. And there's no reason in this world to surround yourself with low integrity people.
Right. But you have to have an honest, authentic commitment to adding value to them.
Right. To being that person yourself.
Right.
To the extent possible.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
So one of the things you need expertise on is, we did a series on the Solari Report called Deep State Tactics. And we still have an intention to turn it into a book. But
What is it, a 12-part series?
It's a 12-part series.
Yeah, it's long, but it's brilliant.
It's long, and there's a lot of repetition, because to understand the deep state tactics, you really need to hear stories.
Yeah.
And, you know, this gets back to nobody's unimportant. We're all prey. Curtis Mayfield had a great album called New World Order, and he said, you know, one of the songs said, it's a new world order. It's a brand new day. It's a new world order. And brother, you're the prey. So it's good. One of the hardest jobs I have is, how do I download everything I know about deep state tactics
exactly
to everybody else on the team and all the subscribers who want it?
I recall very clearly when Jason Baldwin Smith, he got me my first Solari subscription as a gift to help me see reality. And he put me on to deep state tactics. He said, go listen to this full series and we'll talk about it, you know, every step of the way. And I remember the first time I listened to that, it was so hard for me to integrate that into my map. It was a little, for me, it was too much out there.
It was very American, you know, because the Netherlands until recently had a lot less deep state tactics.
Right.
Right.
But then where I grew up and where I came from, I was never exposed, fortunately, to a lot of the plays that are being laid out in the deep state tactics.
Right.
But then the pandemic happens.
Right.
2020 unfolds, and here you are. And here I am prepared with a better map as a result of Jason saying very stubbornly, no, go listen to this, we'll talk about it. And with that map equipped in hand, going into the pandemic, I was safe from a lot of hurt, potentially.
Right, you really did.
Which I'm forever grateful.
The other thing is, learn how the financial ecosystem works around you, in your neighborhood, in your country, in your state.
Right.
In your place-based economic data about how the money works around you, but then also in your industry. I'll never forget, I had a client whose son was a screenwriter in Hollywood, but he could never understand the behavior of the movie companies. And I said, okay, I want you to put a couple thousand dollars in a Schwab account and trade all the stocks.
Yeah.
Just trade all the
stocks. For the movie production companies.
For the movie companies, you know, all the entertainment companies you're working with, I want you to trade their stock. And I want you to read their SEC filings and trade their stock. And as you watch their stock portfolio, you know exactly why people are behaving the way they're behaving.
Yes.
And it worked.
Yes.
You know, so you need to understand the financial ecosystem in the world in which you're dealing. And otherwise you're always gonna be, it's like walking around blindfolded.
Yes. And the good thing is people lie, but numbers don't.
Well, I would say, you know, because most of the lies people tell, you know, people lie to themselves or they stay in the dark. So if you look at the financial ecosystem of most neighborhoods, most people can't explain how the financial ecosystem in their neighborhood works. And you know, they really don't know. So they have many misconceptions about what's going on because they're listening to the official narrative, not looking at what's... Mm-hmm. So they lie to themselves, they lie to each other. And I remember as a child being absolutely baffled by, you know, the adults were all lying to me and they were lying to each other. And I thought, well, how, you know, how can you... Yeah. How can you navigate a world where everybody's lying to themselves and each other? And that's when I came up with two systems, and one of them was money. If I just tracked how the money worked, then I could make sense of what was going on.
Yes.
Right.
Can I just comment that Catherine has, of all the people I know, Catherine has an intuition that is very different from most people. And watching Catherine has taught me to do is to focus on those things that I think I'm too stupid to understand, but I'm not really. I'm seeing something that's a lie or that is a secret that somebody's keeping and they're talking around it, or a limited hangout, or, you know, an expert explaining something. And I'll think, I must just not understand this because this doesn't make sense. And I can't tell you how many times I have come back later and said, oh, that didn't make sense because it was a lie. It was an untruth. And there was something in my body and my thinking that said, I don't understand this. And if I'd really listened to myself and dug in deeper, I would have been able. And sometimes I do that and I find out. I find out the truth of what's going on. And it's like, you know, when I was a teenager, I was really into the Holocaust and reading all these books about the Holocaust. And I kept thinking, how do they know who the Jews are? And I just couldn't let go of that. And then, you know, 30, 40 years later, I read a book about how IBM was keeping all the data on that. It's like, you know, so there was an intuition, but Catherine's got this intuition part, a lot of which is based on having seen the inside of government and the financial, high levels financial circles, and hearing people talk that tells her, oh, that's a liar. Oh, that's a tactic to do disaster capitalism or whatever it is. And, you know, you have to teach yourself those things. You have to listen to them.
You know, it starts with trusting that you can understand and you can figure it out. And you can trust yourself to do that. You have to trust yourself.
And don't rely too much on what other people tell you are experts, because there are a lot of people who are experts or who are full of it.
Experts are people who give you insight. Okay. But they can't tell you what to do. You have to you have to take responsibility, but they can teach you, but you have to take responsibility to get intellectual mastery and to verify. But that is why letting bad dogs into your life is so wasteful of your time, because, you know, you bring in an expert who misleads you and then you're in trouble.
So a final comment before we go into the third pillar, which is risk management, is just something that I learned, which you've been hammering I should do, and I finally got exposed to it yesterday, which seems very simple, but a World Almanac. I read that yesterday for the first time. That would be a phenomenal place to put your money in 2024.
It's buying a World Almanac.
It's buying a World Almanac.
And reading it.
And reading it, because it gives you so many...
It gives you a picture of all the resources and life on the planet. Right. It just gives you a statistical... picture of everything.
So many data points, objective data points that are
peaceful,
helping you build a better map of the whole world. Like it's very big.
So remember what happened? You came in and you quizzed me from
which state in 1865 had the highest, you know, and then,
right. But it's because I read the almanac. I know those things.
Yes.
Right. And it's funny when you, now I work with a lot of different state legislators. You know, I've driven their state. I've read the almanac about the state. I have a basic literacy in how the money works in their states. It's important. One other story I wanted to mention, and this gets back to saying I'm not important, is You know, I had a wonderful client who was going to sell his company. It was a gem of a company. They pre-qualified bidders, and then they were going to take competitive bids. And I was adamant, do not talk about what price, what your floor price is that you will take. If you talk about what your floor price is, that's what you're going to get and no more. And you will lower the amount of money you get. And I made him promise. I made him swear. And so then he took the bids and he called me. And I said, well, what happened? And he said, you're going to be really mad at me. You're going to yell at me. You're going to scream. I said, you didn't talk about what the floor bid was on your phone. He said, I did. And that's exactly what I got. You were right. And he said, I just didn't think I was that important. I said, God, okay. That was really painful for me because I could have made him a lot of money if he just listened.
So that's something that could go horribly wrong if you're equipped with the wrong map or if you don't listen to people with a better map.
Right.
In this case, he should have done that.
So you and I have talked about how hard it is to really build discipline about facing the fact that we're in a great poisoning and really being disciplined. And you know, so you and your wife got food poisoning not that long ago. And then Seitz and I went to, you know, drove across Europe and I didn't bring enough food. And so I ended up eating road food and feeling terrible. And it was, anyway, so it's really hard to be smart about. I want to talk about one subscriber we have who, as soon as he got on the Solari report, he was like, okay, I get it. He and his family completely revolutionized their life and they started building resiliency and protecting themselves against the great point. And this guy has done about the best job I've ever seen. He was in Pennsylvania. And then when the pandemic hit, he said, okay, I can't make it here. I got to get to Tennessee. So he left. But good he friend. And his family, what they have done is incredible. And they have phenomenally high learning speeds, but they burned their boats. There was like, okay, the world's changing. I got to go with it. And they never looked back. And they approached it like a game, like it was fun, like it was great. And if you look at what they've accomplished, it's just astonishing. They're wonderful people. Wonderful people. And, of course, they're plugged in with lots of other, you know, they're on the dream team.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Having chosen that part in Tennessee that they currently live in, probably very consciously based on those conditions.
Right. But their learning plan is awesome. And it's awesome every time I talk with them. And part of it is, you know, when I was talking to Joe Mercola, it was the same thing. He realized, oh, you know, this is a game. It's a game of life and death, but it's a game, you know.
So that maybe that's a nice segue into the third pillar, risk management. So we've spoken about your free and inspired life and all the navigation tools that you need to be able to get there.
Right.
Risk management is ultimately what you can do more properly once you're equipped with a better map and the things that could go possibly wrong if you don't do it.
Right. So in peacetime, risk management is not that important. You know, finding the opportunities, exploiting the opportunities, that's what's important. In wartime, risk management is number one. So you've got to be great at risk management because all it takes is one mistake.
Yes.
You know, I made one wrong assumption on Hamilton Securities and it cost me my whole business.
Acknowledging that you're in a war to a lot of people is very confronting.
Right.
Saying that there is a divide and there is no middle of the road can be very confronting to a lot of people. And one of the things that a lot of families will struggle with, and I've dealt with this myself, is how to integrate the risk management into your family situation in a way that you and your wife can openly speak about it. I've struggled with this.
Right.
Where in this situation, I would be very much acknowledging what's going on and trying to manage appropriately. And then the wife in this case saying, but let's just focus on the positive and can we just, you know, not see the negative? And that's, it's been a struggle, and I imagine a lot of people deal with that.
How are you good at risk management without, you know, adopting a philosophy of life, which is, you know, sort of negative or depressing? So
I would say, okay, so keeping your state of amusement between the two of you.
Right.
So my wife and I, what we do on Mondays is Monday movie night.
Right.
We do Monday movie nights, and there we choose movies that help us build a better map.
Right.
And sometimes when we're overloaded with information, we just choose a good comedy.
Right.
And we keep that state of amusement, or we go have amazing food at a restaurant. Right. So that's what we do. The second
thing. Did you watch Home Alone at Christmas?
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, funny story, my mother-in-law, she's obviously seen the movie 1,000 times. So she sat down with us and we put on the movie. She sat down with us. She's like, I'm just going to watch for 15 minutes and then I'm going to go off to bed. Cause we were in a house in the forest, right? So we were all together with my in-laws. She was like, 15 minutes and then I'm going to go upstairs. She watched the whole freaking movie with us. So that's a good way to keep your state of amusement. So I would encourage everybody to go to the movie section on the Solera Report and just look for movies or look at the hard copy wrap-ups. Look for that section where, you know, the Monday movie nights can be filled with a lot of joy and good map building.
Well, a lot of, you know, one of the reasons we have Let's Go to the Movies is I read huge amounts. And so to kind of figure out what was going on, you know, I read an awful lot of books that are very, it's a lot of negative information. And when you read books on war and organized crime, it's just it's negative. Yeah. And but I finally realized, wait a minute, it's all in the movies. You know, Hollywood tells you everything.
Oh, yeah. And the International is a good movie to learn.
Exactly. Yeah. So what I realized is people can watch a movie, whereas they can't read a 700-page book.
Yes.
So I would give them movies and say, here's the part of this movie that's true. And that's how we ended up doing the movie of the week on the Solera Report. So
I have, can I bring up the third rail of risks?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Years ago, I saw on the Solera Report, I was doing some work for you, but I certainly wasn't full time with you. You know, I did little things here and there, but I had the subscription and I was reading about Catherine being involved in the secret space program. And, you know, my son is like, and has known Catherine all of his life. And, you know, there's some things like the Federal Reserve that he understands completely. And then he says, well, that space stuff is just, I'm not there. And, you know, over the years, I've started, and now much more recently, I've heard people like Farrell and, you know, even in the mainstream news, letting out little secrets about what's really out there. And I realized that, you know, Catherine's been talking about, well, what if they're, you know, like, what if AI is coming from somewhere else off planet? Or, you know, what if, when we're looking for the missing money, what if they're putting the missing money into some kind of technology that we know nothing about? So, you know, I think it's really good to listen to things that maybe sound really off planet, if you know what I mean. And have that we've not considered at all before as possibilities, and let those things kind of hang and be, you know, I'm going to keep an open mind about that and listen to people when they talk about those things, because now I see that UAP or whatever they're talking about, the off planet things, as a risk factor. And maybe the reason that Mr. Global's doing, you know, there's maybe a 1% or a 5%, whatever chance that Mr. Global is doing something because there's some kind of secret pressure from off planet.
Let's just remember, you know, when I tell this story online, that the first reason I looked at all these questions about the secret space program, because the U.S. Navy tried to persuade me that aliens existed and live among us. That was the U.S. Navy trying to persuade me. Okay. So, you know, and, you know, that's a whole nother story, but that's got me first looking at space. But when I realized the financial implications of the money pouring into space, that's when I got really interested in space. And I'll never forget being on one radio show with somebody who was very, who found space controversial and didn't think it was an important topic. And I said, look, if you just take all the legitimate reports of unidentified flying objects, we're talking about $150 trillion of hardware.
Right. That, yeah.
So I'm a financial person, $150 trillion of hardware. I want to know who's building it and, you know, who's making money on it. But we did the first wrap up on space. Here we go in 2015. And then we did the space-based economy in 2017. And I had a lot of people who were skeptical of it. And then when Trump created the Space Force, they were like, oh, you're right. Mm-hmm. There is a big investment in space.
And that's not even mentioning all the private companies that are just pouring money, billions into building all sorts of applications that things they can shoot up into space.
When we did the database on all the venture for space-based economy, we did this huge database and published a table press of all the venture deals in space. And I remember meeting with a space company in Sydney with Jason. He was dealing with these space entrepreneurs, and he kept telling them about me. So I came down and we showed him the database. And I'll never forget Jason going through that database. And he was like, holy cow.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
And that onslaught of money, that coincided with the whole spec, the rollout of specs.
That was in 2000. The database was 2017. But they were building, and then of course the SPACs, much more money.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Risk management, a beautiful way to gauge how potential risks might impact your life is by looking at how they impact your time management.
Right.
Or your money.
Right.
But ultimately, your time management, how does it impact making a mistake and having to go to the hospital is a cost of money, but it's also, you know, keeping you
out
of the
workforce,
putting you at risk. It's taking a lot of time. So
one of the greatest sets of risk is we are in a great poisoning, and you have to get yourself educated about what it is, how it impacts you, how you can protect yourself. Right. You know, so first you get your mind clear, you protect your mind, but your body has to be clear too. So protecting yourself against the great poisoning is a huge investment of time and money, and it's absolutely critical. I'll never forget one of my relatives called me and said, okay, I've been diagnosed with cancer. I know you know what to do. What do I do? And I gave them for 24, 48 hours, I gave them a download of what they had to read, what they had to do, and then I figured out how to get them the right doctor, surgeon, everything else. And they had the benefit of 20 years of research and all these experts I have access to. And it saves their life because they had that knowledge. You don't want to wait until you get the diagnosis. You want to, you know, if you start early, you'll never get the diagnosis. But if you do, you'll know what to do. So first of all, take the great poison serious. Learn how to use it and learn how to protect yourself. And I say that. And so in the last 3 months, you and I, we had a black mark for
eating,
eating
insufficient. No, getting contracting food poisoning is one hell of a way to disrupt your schedule.
Right.
It's perfect for that. Now, or buying ice cream from a dicey gas station in rural Virginia and then feeling sick. The two of us.
Believe the two of us were guilty of that. Okay. Yeah. So one of the things I've written a couple pieces about is making a decision. I made a decision after the litigation was over to spend a significant amount of money on detoxing and not on health insurance. Because in the United States, for someone like me, health insurance was phenomenally expensive, but all it got you was the ability to go to all sorts of doctors and healthcare institutions I would never go to. And we've been proved now are really not safe. And so I spent a huge amount on preventative healthcare and detox. I did get a AAA insurance policy for car accidents. So if I ever needed a hospital, it would be a trauma accident. I also got Samaritan Health, which is a Christians who self-insure each other. So I had that, and I had AAA, which was much less expensive, and then spent all my money on preventative health care.
Right.
So that was a way of risk managing the situation, and it turned out to be successful.
Hedging the worst-case scenario.
Right.
And then proactively spending the money on preventative measures.
Right. And you know, I did a lot to learn how to be my own doctor or find healthcare experts who could, you know. And Carolyn, you do a lot of interviews on Financial Rebellion now with Jennifer Walters. And Jennifer Walters is just an amazing nurse who was a subscriber. And she was posting these long diatribes on health that were fantastic in subscriber comments. So I just called her up out of the blue. I said, how'd you like to run our health series? She said, oh, I didn't know you had a health series. I said, no, but if you'll run it, we'll do it. You know,
we'll create it.
Anyway, but she really understands the concept of being your own doctor. And she thinks anybody can learn how to do it. We should talk about some of the mistakes. One of the big mistakes where people lose a lot of money is they mess around with precious metals before they know where they're going to store it and how to store it properly.
Right.
There's a lot of information in the Solaria report about, you know, if you're going to store it at home, how to buy a safe, where to put the safe, mm-hmm. how to, you know, I've known people who bought a huge slug of precious metals, left it in the basement, call the plumber in, you know, the plumber's down there. 3 months later, they realize the precious metals is gone, too late. But they really don't think through how they're going to, you know, so they make a big investment of precious metals. Then they die. They didn't tell anybody where it was. Okay.
Right.
So, you know, the biggest way people lose money on precious metals is they forget where they put it.
Right.
So
next thing you know, you're digging up dollars from the Colombian jungle, like Pablo Escobar.
And the money's rotten.
Hi.
I had one friend, a colleague, who didn't, you know, if they had only talked to me, I could have made sure they wouldn't make this mistake. They bought a big slug of precious metals, had it delivered to their child's place of employment, which was a Miami law firm, which I could have told them. The next week, their house was burglarized. Somebody so the law firm slipped the information to somebody. And I could have told them never, mm-hmm. ever trust a law firm as a place to take delivery.
What about custodians in regards to precious metals?
Right. So you want to make sure you have a reliable custodian. And you want to make sure you have a reliable dealer, and a reliable dealer will help you find a reliable custodian. But you want to really, you know, a reliable custodian. And generally people, when they get a third-party custodian, don't make a mistake. But occasionally you can find one that's not reliable and they disappear their money.
Or have your gold be stored in a questionable bank that will store it for you.
Right.
And then worst case, you can't access it.
Right.
Or it was never there.
Right. Right.
Okay, so family risk management.
Right. So
how to do it effectively?
So one of the biggest mistakes I saw clients make was men and women not working together. Where men and women work together, they're phenomenally better at risk management.
Yes.
And you know, I have lots of theories why we could do a whole Solaria report on that. But what I will tell you, it's absolutely critical. And if you can get multiple generations working together, that's very powerful. We always recommend a book by Jay Hughes called Building Family.
Fantastic book.
It's a fantastic book. And it's about helping all the members of your family be successful.
Yes.
And it's not about making money. It's about helping each other. It's basically teaching a family how to conspire together to help each other be successful.
Right.
And so where you can get the different generations and the different sexes and people in different industries, because, you know, different people in the family are different, where you can get that kind of, you know, working together, you get phenomenal results at risk management.
Can I put a plug in for archiving?
That, yes.
Fire away.
That's on the list right here.
Didn't notice it.
Well, you wrote a big piece. Remember, I asked you to write a big piece on archiving, and you wrote it. Right. If you go to Solaria and put in archiving, and failure to archive your financial records and your documentation is a, you know, the people who come back from natural disasters and weather warfare are the people who have multiple copies of their documents in multiple places,
right.
And they've got their insurance policy, and they come back like that.
Yes, both physical and digital copies.
Right.
I have a friend who stored a lot of jewelry that she had collected over her whole life in some storage pieces in a house that she wasn't living in, and the people who came in got access to her house. All the jewelry is gone, and a lawsuit could happen for the people who had control over her house, but she has no records of 20, 30, 40 years of jewelry, and taking a photograph of the jewelry would have allowed her to make the insurance and legal claims. And there are just so many aspects of our, the other thing is passwords. Do you know how much how much time you can lose by not having passwords. Let's not even go into the Bitcoin information that you can lose and lose your Bitcoin completely. You need to know who actually has in your life actually has that information that you can trust, so that if anything happens to you, that property is recovered. But going into a time when I believe that there will be a loss of information that we now have digitally on the internet, I think that there's going to be a way that that's going to be lost. So make sure that you have information about what your assets are and, you know, just anything that you need, even recipes and things like that, that you have them in some form that's not just digital and that's not just in one place.
This is where the Jay Hughes book is really good too. It's talking about the wealth, how to effectively do that in a family situation. At what stage of your children's upbringing do you talk about the fact that there might be wealth in the family? How do you start transferring not only the wealth, but also the knowledge that resides in the family business?
Right. So Hughes wrote the book to help wealthy families stay wealthy. But if you look at the process that he's describing, it's the same process that helps families build wealth.
Build it, yes. Right. Yes, it's right. Very suitable for both.
Right. So I want to talk about personal safety, because America, I'm going to focus on America now. America is a very violent country. But a lot of people in the middle class, upper middle class, have been living in a bubble where they didn't know how dangerous it was. And now it's getting dangerous for everybody. As I said, everybody's on the menu. And the last couple times I've traveled in the United States, you know, I do a lot of driving and road tripping. There's a serious deterioration, and it requires, you know, so you're a martial arts, I would describe you as a martial arts champion. You've been doing martial arts since you were, what?
11.
11?
Yeah, okay. 17 years.
It's very, very serious. So you feel very confident. You never worry when you travel because you know you can.
Right. I mean, in most non-lethal weapon carrying cases, yes.
Right.
Right. Hand-to-hand combat, yeah, absolutely. But the United States brings a whole different ballgame.
Right. But we're seeing cities that are really deteriorating, and we're seeing an invasion in the southern border. And I think there has to be a lot more thought given. I'm a person who's dealt with a lot of violence personally in my life. I think many Americans have never been trained to deal with violence and don't know how to do it.
Right.
And, you know, it's both psychological and,
Or stay out of it,
you know. So you have to train to see it, understand it.
Right.
You know, for a long time, we would watch these crowds of people who would start fighting as a crowd. And I would try and get everybody to watch the Kingsman movie and say, this is entrainment that's causing this. And when you see these kind of violent furballs, what you need to do is turn off your phone and get out. Don't
get
help.
Involved.
Get out. Get, you know, walk off. Get out. Because it's not a natural phenomenon.
No.
And, you know, so they need to know that that kind of thing can happen and exists. And I just think there is a whole change in mindset that has to happen. And families need to teach their children. So you said, you know, my kids are going to learn martial arts.
Oh, they're,
yeah.
Your That's non-negotiable. It's like learning how to swim. You're going to learn how to swim. You're going to learn how to fight.
Right.
And we're going to train, do serious training.
Right.
Absolutely. Another perfect place to stash your cash in 2024 would be martial arts training.
Yes.
Training with guns.
Right.
How to do it properly, safely.
Right.
Get a good company that knows how to do these trainings.
Right.
Buy the guns, buy the ammo if this is
learn
needed
how to
in your,
hunt.
In learn your situation.
How to hunt. Learn how to fish. Hunt. Learn how to hunt. Learn how to get food.
Yes.
Right. Okay. I'll never forget. A wonderful subscriber who said, I can't believe you chose Yellowstone for movie of the year. It's so violent. It's offensive. I tried to watch it, and I find it offensive. And I wanted to say, but I didn't. Have you ever lived in America?
Yeah. No, I love Yellowstone. Okay. It's phenomenal. All right. So that is risk management. Any closing thoughts in regards to risk management, Carolyn?
Well, I watched some parts of, I think, the first two seasons of Yellowstone, and I learned a whole lot. And I'm not sure I would have thought to apply those things that I learned to my own life, except that I'd heard Catherine talking about it for a couple of years. And I started seeing things from the other perspective. And so, yeah. And the other thing is, I know Catherine, you know, famously says, throw your TV away. But there are a number of TV series that are very instructive about what can be on the horizon. And, you know, Yellowstone is helpful, but, you know, Battlestar Galactica.
If you want to understand AI, Battlestar Galactica is fantastic. Yeah.
X-Files and things like that, that actually tell us what is going on that we thought was fiction. So becoming involved in fiction and understanding its applicability and the fact that sometimes reality is woven into fiction as a way of delivering the information is it's helpful. We need to keep our eyes open. You know, I was attacked a number of times when I was in Washington, and when those things happened, a lot of times it was because I wasn't paying attention, and people could see that I was not paying attention. Just being aware and not lost in thought when we're in public places is really important.
So I grew up on the streets of West Philadelphia, so I always pay attention. When I first got to, you know, I went to my first 2 years of college was in this beautiful rural area. And we used to walk downtown to the Pizza House. So we'd walk from the school downtown. And my neighbor, my roommate used to always say, why are you always looking over your shoulder? Mm. If you grew up in West Philadelphia, you didn't walk without looking over your shoulder.
Very different frame of reference to you and her. All right, so let's turn to living equity. Now we're focused on the things that we actually want to build. Right. These are the things we are for. And living equity is not something you can put on a balance sheet.
Right.
These are the intangible things that represent a lot in our lives.
Right.
And that can help, which we'll get to, build up the financial in your lives.
Right.
The financial equity. So the two are working together.
Right.
So let's talk about living equity. This is everything, just to give a couple of examples. This is the education you and your family all enjoy. This is your health. This is, you know, being surrounded by people that have high energy, that are high integrity. This
culture.
It's a high culture.
It's education. Right. It's health.
Right. And there seems to be a plain, there seems to be an attack, a deterioration of the culture is what I'm observing. So we, on one hand, you have the gray poisoning, which is impacting our health.
Right. So you're trying to poison people's health, but you're trying to poison their minds.
Right.
And so what happens is by destroying their culture, you destroy their ability to organize, to create, and to build. And so it, when you destroy a society's culture, they lose their power.
Right. And that there seems to be a promotion of immorality and themes that, you know, rhyme with that. That it seems to be promoted these days. So you're saying this is intentional.
And so everybody has to borrow and do business with the big banks because they can't trust their neighbor. They can't lend and do deals with their neighbor because there's not a basic morality that lets that happen. That's part of making people dependent on the system.
Could it be a distraction method too?
Yeah, sure. So if you look at... I spend almost no time looking into or paying attention to all the sort of woke, blah, you know, and all those culture wars because it's all designed as a distraction.
Right.
So I just, you know, it's like, okay, you can have that war without me. I'm not engaged.
Right.
It burns up a huge amount of people's time because they get hooked energetically on it.
Right.
If there was one mistake that I regret more than anything else in raising my son, it's not paying attention to what he was being taught in the public schools. And, you know, if you're going to look at how to spend your time, if you have children in any kind of school that's not you doing it at home, it really behooves you to find out exactly what money is coming from the state, the federal government, to in initiatives that are meant to teach different different moralities than you might have at home, and that might be totally counter to what you are telling your children. You have no idea that that's going on.
Right. They're really being indoctrinated.
Being intelligent about that is really key if you have children.
The other thing is, there is a great effort to get us all addicted. You know, whether it's physically addicted to drugs, whether it's mentally addicted to, you know, different things online like gaming. You know, one of my things that I've talked with you about is addiction to porn.
Right.
Because that is used as a trap. And a lot of people, including a trap to get control files on people.
Right.
So there's a lot of effort to get people addicted in a way that is very harmful to their productivity and their health.
Which starts with kids being on phones and iPads.
Right.
And having access to the internet. And then having access to things that they should never be exposed to at that young age.
So this is what really shocks me the most. Think of, I always use the James Bond movie, so I think of Spectre
right.
as the global organized crime. When you give a child a smartphone, you are giving Spectre intimate access into your child's subconscious mind. Why would anybody do that?
Lack of a good map. Lack right. of an understanding of the risks that are out there with right. doing that
right.
thing.
It's really right. the most dangerous people on the planet have intimate access right. to your child. And you're paying for it.
So let's talk about the... But we're going to get to where to stash your cash and give people options to actually promote the living equity in their lives. But I just want to talk about, before we go to the stories, let's talk about a higher culture that you observe everywhere around you today. Where do you find higher culture? Because we need to promote that. And
so I find
it
on the dream team. You know, the dream team is all committed. I'll never forget in Doctors for COVID Ethics, there were about six of us.
Right.
One from Germany, one from Canada, one from Switzerland. Two from Switzerland, one from America. I mean, we're all over the world. And we're on Doctors for COVID Ethics. We're doing the first of the five symposiums, amazing symposiums. And somebody said, oh, well, what music should we use for the beginning and the end or mm-hmm. the interims? All six people at the same exact moment said, Bach.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah. how funny is that? That everybody yeah. here loves Bach.
Yeah.
It was incredible. You know, and so we did Bach for a couple of symposiums, and then people decided, okay, well, maybe we could do Mozart or Vivaldi
yeah.
and yeah, Beethoven. Yeah. I think got some anyway, but and that's why when you're around people who are really committed to a very rich cultural life, they're constantly educating, inspiring you. So Nina Hein always inspired me. So I was in LA one year when she was leaving. She worked for a big corporation. And so she announced she is leaving this big, and she has no idea what she's going to do. And Farrell had persuaded me that we couldn't save the country, but we could save the culture. But I had, being an investment banker, I had no idea what that right. meant. I was like, well, yeah. how do you save a culture? It took me years to get my mind around this and understand what he was saying. But I figured, okay, I'll hire Nina to write a culture column. She'll save the culture.
Right.
And so I asked her to write a column. And Nina is a ferocious art lover. And through Nina, I've discovered whole worlds I didn't even know existed.
Oh.
It's unbelievable.
I can tell you how surprisingly fascinating it is that
yeah.
to go on a tour with Nina Hein through the Rijksmuseum to go and see the whole Vermeer exhibition.
Uh-huh.
And see all of those paintings and hear her talk about all these specific techniques he utilized. And it's right. just surprisingly fascinating.
Right. And we should tell everybody you recorded it with her, your interview
right.
with
yeah.
her after going through the Rijksmuseum. And we're going to do it in Philadelphia in March.
Oh, yes.
We're going to we're negotiating how many museums we go to. But I told Nina we're doing a filming in front of the Rocky statue in the Art Museum
Ooh.
After we go to the Barnes Foundation.
I like that.
So. Okay. So we're coming out with her book this year, Women in Art. And I would never have thought, you know, she's done a lot of columns because she really finds and digs out these women yes. artists and focuses on the amazing stories. You're always getting the story. And it always, a lot of times it's in context of the history of what was going on. So one of the women is Van Gogh's sister-in-law, who I think is one of the great women of the art world. And anyway, but she does these things in Women in Art. So she's coming. We're publishing her book this year, Women in Art. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
You know, there was a big push for STEM. And there were a lot of parents who thought, you know, I need to teach my kids about science, technology, engineering, math. That's not the culture. And, you know, I think that failing to pay attention to those things that are that some people are think kind of are kind of extraneous to one's career are, you know, you're really doing yourself harm by not absorbing the culture and understanding the culture and, you know, music and art and all of those, you know, plays and all of what you're calling high culture is really important in understanding the world. I just don't think that a concentration on science, technology, engineering, and math is enough.
No, it's not enough because all the most important decisions in building, growing, and running an enterprise, whether in government or in business or in community, you know, they come down to what, I don't know if you remember Charlie Kendrick and Hamilton used to say, it's a gestalt thing. In other words, you have to make the big decisions based on strategic direction, and it's based in values. And you can't make it based on price. It's based in values. And I'll never forget when I was Assistant Secretary of Housing. So I'm running this $300 billion portfolio, and essentially none of the politicians give a damn about it. But you have to decide, okay, what's our plan? Where are we going to spend our – how are we going to run this? How are we going to – you know, it all comes down to understanding what's important, what has value. Right. And that's not price. You can't, you know, price is a wonderful thing, especially when you have free markets. But price can't tell you about value. Value is, you know, a much bigger thing. Anyway, Charlie used to call it a gestalt thing. But if you don't have culture, then you don't know how to value anything. And you can't run anything. You can't build anything.
Do you believe that that is why we see such an attack on the moral base of society, whether it's through coming after specific brands or...
You're making money liquidating people who will end up powerless, right, and then you control them.
Because imagine a society where you set out on a multi-century plan to build a cathedral.
Right. That's power.
That's real power.
That's power.
A society that...
When you can organize to build things that are longer than your lifetime. That's civilization.
Right. And gets people out of that self-centric, very egotistic thinking and think multi-generational.
So if you look at the tactics of making people powerless, one of the tactics is, you know, sort of destroying their culture, getting them to think they're a victim, getting them to think they're helpless. You know, and so you whack somebody and then, you know, they get into the victim space, then they can't get out. And that's why, remember, there used to lawyers who had orders during the litigation. They weren't allowed to use the word victim. They kept trying to make me add, there were standing orders. You may not use the V word. Right. No, right. No. Oh, this was, you know, remember. And we had one reporter who decided to use the V word. And the lawyers were terrified they were going to get whacked for that. Anyway.
All right. So let's move into the stories.
Okay.
Some of the lessons learned over the years of what to do and what not to do in building living equity.
So one of the most expensive things that destroys family wealth are divorces and kids who get in real trouble. And so one of the most important things to building family wealth is a family that invests in success as a family, as a marriage, as a family. And then, as part of that, protects themselves from all the games that are trying to destroy their culture and protects themselves from the great poisoning. So you have a hostile environment. You have a marriage. You have kids. You have a hostile environment. You have to lead and manage it to lift up the marriage, lift up the family, but then protect yourself from the tactics.
Right.
And that's a complex thing, but it takes continuous learning, right, and you have to work at it. It has to be conscious.
It really helps. This is what you taught me, to look at the family unit as a living thing, or your business as a living thing. There's a field thing going on.
Right. It's a shared intelligence, and it's, you have to invest in it. It's like growing a garden. Mm. So, and it's hard. It's hard work. So the first book I gave you was A Good Marriage.
Right. Which, yeah, it really helps to assess your situation like that.
Well, I remember I was a member of a church in Washington, and you had to take a very serious course or they wouldn't marry you. And it was all about, you know, responsibility and money and authority and powers and all the real issues that cause dissension in a marriage. And I thought that was a great practice. I don't know if your church did that, Carolyn.
Oh, it's an absolute requirement. And my father was the one, my father was an Episcopal priest, and he was the one who had to do that. And, you know, I came from a family of having a father, as I said, who was a clergyman. But I learned from that there is so much that you teach your children by letting them see you applying moral principles in your life. And there were just so many things that my father did that he didn't get paid for. You know, he visited homeless people in jails and, you know, counseled mothers of, you know, unmarried producers of many children. When they were asking for money from him, he'd talk to them about, you know, choices in life and that sort of thing. And when you're a child and you see a parent applying moral principles, it's one thing to say things, but it's another thing to live those. And when you make compromises in your life, your kids are going to see that too. So having a part of having a strong family is in the senior people steadfastly holding on to integrity and just not in any situation, you know, giving back the extra change that you got by mistake at a store tells your kids you don't take advantage of other people, you know, that yeah, maybe it's not very much money, but giving back that, you know, that mistakenly received money is part of a whole system that we want to live. And that's part of having a strong family. Is it's too late when they get to be teenagers because they're going to have all the other influences.
One of the great experiences I had, I'll never forget, a wonderful woman came to do a consultation with me. And she had a child who had gotten divorced and was struggling. And happened to live in a city where the real estate values I anticipated were going to do very, very well. And her child had a single parent. And her financial advisor had insisted that she didn't have enough money to help her daughter buy a house. And they lived in a neighborhood that wasn't safe. But buying a house in that town was a great investment. So it was a very smart investment. And, you know, this is one of those cases where the financial planner says you need at least $25 million invested in the deep state before you can afford to buy your daughter a house. And I said to her, look, if you get in trouble, who's going to be there for you?
Right.
Your daughter. You know, who's the most valuable asset in your whole life? Your grandchild. What are you thinking about? Of course you can afford to buy them a house. Yeah. And it's a better investment. If you look at where they live, that town, it's a better investment than anything in your stock portfolio. You crazy?
Right.
You know, buy him a house now. You know, I couldn't. I was in a state of shock. And I said, you want your child and you want your grandchild to be healthy, safe, and successful.
Yes.
Well, and investing in the people that you love, including friends. But, you know, you talk about the People Bank, Catherine, and that is an investment. We don't tend to think, you know, where to stash your cash. You don't tend to think of lending money to somebody you love in order to enhance both your life and theirs. You don't think of that as a financial investment, but it absolutely is.
Well, I've told this story hundreds of times during the litigation. When the litigation started, it turned out I had given or lent $250,000 to family and friends as gifts or whatever. And I had a wealthy uncle who helped me throughout the litigation. And he, one of the things he said was, well, she helped everybody else, so now I'm going to help her. If I hadn't helped everybody else, he wouldn't have helped me. That was number one. But number two, throughout the litigation, you know, people either gifted or paid me back. And I got back through that process $250,000. And that was the one source of money they couldn't shut off because it was in the People Bank. And that's why when I won the litigation, we got a whole bunch of money. And my CPA said, let's put the money in the back. Let's refund up the 401k. I said, I'm putting it in the People Bank because the People Bank is what kept me alive.
Right.
And, you know, and that's tricky. You can put money in People Bank and be wrong and lose a lot of money. So you have to make sure you're doing the right people. But so it was a great investment.
These stories really illustrate to me how when you look at an investment, you don't necessarily always look at the financial return full stop. You look at the broader impact of making that investment, which like a people investment doesn't necessarily result in a better financial return than putting it in an index.
So I'll say, and I won't mention who they are, but the family I most admire in terms of building wealth, who you know, you've met.
Yeah.
They're unbelievable. But, you know, when you ask them what they're up to, they want their business to go for hundreds of years.
Right.
And that's how they raise their kids, and that's how they raise their grandkids. They're building a world. They're building an empire. They're building a, you know, and they think about it strategically that way.
They don't waste a second
thinking about yield. Now they measure, you know, they watch every penny and they know the numbers and they know what this is yielding and that is yielding.
Sure. But they don't waste a minute that is not concerned with further expanding that ecosystem, that empire.
Right.
They don't gossip.
Right. Everything has a strategic place in building the empire, and everything is productive. You know, so if they get whacked, you know, the next thing is, okay, how are we going to build wealth today?
Right. How can we involve the children? How can we involve the grandchildren? How can we teach them?
The children from the first tiniest age.
It's phenomenal.
I disagree with you, though, Ricardo, that there isn't a financial return. It's just that you have to have faith that there is a financial return out there, but you aren't going to know how that's going to come back to you. That's living in faith that you make the right investments in your time and your energy and your focus, and that it will come back in financial terms.
Right.
Oh, I very much agree with that.
They are totally in faith.
Right.
Right.
Carolyn, I want to ask you one thing about local investment opportunities in regards to food. But I want to set the stage first, because the Netherlands and the Dutch farmers and fishermen seem to be the canary in the coal mine, if you ask me. And I would invite anybody to read Else van Hamelen's new piece on the farmers and fishermen.
Right. Netherlands is right out front in finding ways to poison us. I was really sad. They're right out front in fake food.
They are. And I will tell you one anecdotal story about myself. I love to eat fish because I believe it's very healthy. And I wanted to buy cod for myself and my in-laws. So I swing by, I'm at the beach. And then on the way back home, I swing by this wholesale fishing operation. This is not a local fishing shop that sells directly to retail. They do wholesale. The boats are right outside the door. But they also have a retail small window where you can buy fish. So I go in there and ask for cod, and there is no cod. So I ask him, what's going on? Why is there no cod? Is there nothing in the freezer, nothing you have, you know, in the back of the store? And I say, no, we're all out and we're not getting any. So I asked him, I said, why? How can that be possible? You got all these boats. And they say, well, the fishermen ain't going out because it's no longer economic. So we either buy the cod at excessively high prices, which are just, it's just no way to make a return for the business. It's not economic. Or we don't buy cod at all.
Well, and remember, the whole North Sea, all these countries on the North Sea grew up on the wealth of cod fishing.
Right.
So for there to be no cod means no wealth.
Well, you make a really good point that local investment is absolutely something. That's one of the things that is very difficult to predict a return, although in some cases, you know, one can. If you're loaning money to a restaurant that's incredibly expensive so that they can expand, you might be able to predict the return on that. But there's both the direct financial return that you can predict, and there's the return in terms of the quality of life. And we're talking about living equity and living a free and inspired life. And if we see the culture and the unique things about our particular way of living being drained out because everything is being financialized, and you've got Kmart taking over, you know, chain restaurants rather than the really the things that make our lives rich. We realize that getting involved in the local businesses and finding out if we've got resources that we can do to restore or maintain those unique aspects that really make our particular place of living wonderful, then we realize that there's a return. There's both a financial return and probably a better financial return. Right now, I mean, you can invest in all these big tech companies and their, you know, their returns are skyrocketing in the public markets. But is that really where you want, you know, do you really want to support that? And so if you find opportunities locally, you may be able to get much better returns and not be contributing to the technocracy. And, you know,
I love what you said about the farmers, about the investment also being something to cherish, about being something that you're very proud of contributing to. Something that you help build, something that you are.
I have my own farmer. And it's a woman. I have my own farmer and I go periodically and I get things from her and I'm able to give to her from the knowledge that I have, law, all sorts of things like that. And she's able to teach me so many things. So it's more than just access to pure food, which it is pure food, but it's also learning more about the production and, you know, building the right relationships and keeping the small farms going in my area.
So there's a lot of ways to contribute to these operations in a way that can be a nice investment, both on the financial as well as on the living equity side of things. There's also ways of setting up an operation yourself like this, setting up your own farm. We swung by a farm in Tennessee that's doing a very, very good business in the local environment, selling the best bacon I've ever had in my life, full stop. They are phenomenal. And it's this family-run operation that's selling out every Saturday, doing workshops, teaching people about how to do regenerative farming, how to do, you know, how to take proper care of these animals. And it's in a for-profit way. That's how you do it.
So when is it? Is it March? I think in March, I'm going to be speaking at Polyface Farm. And Polyface is arguably the most profitable small farm in the United States. Joel Salatin, he was on the food series not that long ago.
Right.
And it's a family enterprise. It's a family operation. But they teach people how to farm. So
let's talk about where to stash that cash in a way that promotes living equity.
So we got to talk about water. Because the annual wrap up, the theme is water.
It's water.
And Ulrich Groninger spent a lot of time studying water. And I have, because I was poisoned so many times during litigation, I learned the value of having a whole house water filter if somebody puts something down your well. But there is no doubt, I'll never forget, I called the smartest person that I'd ever worked with in real estate. She knew more about real estate and the real estate business and the real estate industry than anybody I know who was sort of on the Freedom team. And I called her and I said, what would you say is the single most important thing driving the value of real estate in a place? And you know what she said? Water. The quality of the water. And as you drive around America, you'll see, or drive around Europe, you'll see the quality of the water make a tremendous difference to the attractiveness of the real estate and the health of the people there.
Right.
So, you know, if I was focused on living equity, one of the investments I would make is learning about water and figuring out how your water systems, whether water filtration or structuring your water, the kind of water you drank, I would really focus on.
This has big impact on our food, but also on our beverages, such as wine, beers.
Right.
They're heavily impacted by the water that's used to create them.
Right. And unfortunately, there's real debasement in the food system, including in the water. And it's something to think about. Needless to say, we keep coming back to learning. But when you do a learning plan, you have to cost it out, both the time and the money.
Right.
And I just think there's nothing. We were just talking about a family who twice a year take their kids on these amazing trips because they want to teach them about the whole world.
Right.
It's a big investment of money, but it's a great thing to do.
So investing in the next generation, investing in your kids in these ways that are quite non-traditional almost, where you teach them about water, you take them on these journeys to a local river and you go have a talk about that, or you fly them out on a plane to some place to teach them about that culture and their food and how they're growing food. That can be a tremendous investment.
Right. It is.
Send them to a farm camp.
Yep. That's a great idea. I like that.
Let them work on a farm.
Or a martial arts camp.
Yeah.
That'll do them good too.
So I remember when they passed the housing bill, I called you and I said, Carolyn, it is cheaper and easier for your son to learn how to build a house for himself than to even bother. The system is so corrupt at this point. It's just, if you're a young person, you should learn how to build your own house.
And your own sauna. We have to talk about saunas and ice baths. I will tell you, hands down, that my best investment in 2023 was to buy a sauna.
Right. So we're buying a sauna. I'm buying a sauna in 2023.
Unbelievable tool for detoxing, getting a clear brain, getting a relaxed body. And it's great for you know, bonding with friends, going into the sauna. And
so you have to have a big enough sauna then.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You want
I'm
going to
get
popcorn.
A little one because I don't have a lot of room. Anyway.
Okay. All right.
Financial equity?
Financial equity.
Yeah, let's go.
Now we're in the trenches.
Yeah, so now we're in my lane.
Yes, there we go. So financial equity.
So on equity overview for the annual wrap-up, Tim Caban and I run through all the asset classes. So we're going to go through sort of performance last year, what looks good for 2024 in the asset classes. So we don't need to do that here. But one of the things I do think it's very important to understand all the asset classes and to consider all the asset classes and not get stuck. You know, Carolyn and I were just talking about someone who had written a Substack about, you know, the end of the world is coming and there's no hope for anything. So all you do is buy precious metals and I don't know.
Swim in gold and starve.
I don't know. Just sit around and be depressed. Is that fair to say what the Substack said? You know, you really need to consider all the different asset classes, including the asset classes that build resiliency for you. So one of the things I always say is in wartime, you want to invest in things that are going to permanently reduce your overhead. You want, get rid of the debt and get rid of the overhead and so much more do it yourself. Right. If you can do it, if it makes sense. And so maintaining a very low overhead and maintaining no debt that you can get trapped in is, you know, just be very judicious in how you use debt. And if you're going to do debt, who you do debt with.
Right.
Because if you have an unethical party or a party who's lawless on the other side, it's a very different situation than if you don't.
Can I say something about the asset class of automobiles? Bad idea to buy a $50,000 car that is surveilling you. Consider an older car because the newer cars, and there are just so many people who spend their last dime on, you know, very, very high monthly payments for a car, where it really makes much more sense in buying something, you know, paying cash for a car, because it's a real drain to have a monthly car payment. And if it's $300 to $500 a month, that's a risk. That is a high risk. And
you're doing
that
more
so that you can be surveilled, because all of the new cars are surveilling you. Right.
Right. Now, of course, the European Union is doing a lot to keep older cars out of the cities, making it very inconvenient to own one.
Like the diesel car. So I have a Peugeot diesel, and my tax this year is $2,000 for having a diesel. 2,000 euros a year.
And that's just the financial disincentivizing. It's also the paperwork, which I've alluded to in the past, the paperwork to get into a big country by classifying your car as having a specific exhaust profile.
Right. Now, I have a prejudice in this environment, as you know, and that is I like real. So I always say, know what you own and why you own it.
Understand.
And you want real. So people assume that I mean, you know, precious metals or real estate, but I don't. I mean, if you own a stock, it's a stock, it's an enterprise that does something real, it does something important, it does something essential. And it controls or owns real assets or real operations that deliver real value. and you want to stay away from paper, which, first of all, you don't know what, you know, you right. look at it, you have no idea what you're invested in, or it's in so much stuff, you don't know where it is or what it does. But if it's a fixed income security, you have no idea what the fundamental credit is that's going to return
right.
the principal and the coupon to you.
Which might be eaten away by inflation over a right. longer period of time.
Right. So you need to understand, whenever you do an investment, whether it's local, it's global, whether it's liquid, it's not liquid, you need to understand what the real economic proposition right. that adds value is and how that relates to what you get. And if you can't understand that, explain, don't do it.
Right.
Don't do it.
Earlier in the conversation, we talked about not doing prophecies, but right. there seem to be a lot of parallels between stages of the Weimar Republic buildup and the hyperinflation that followed. Now, I'm not insinuating anything, but say we get even higher inflation than we're seeing today, what is our strategy?
What is our strategy to avoid prophecy, or what is our strategy to deal with inflation?
To deal with inflation.
Okay, well, dealing with inflation, it gets back to having the lowest overhead and the most resilience possible.
Right.
Okay. So you've got your revenues and you've got your expenses and then you've got your assets. The revenues, you want to be something, you want to provide a service which is sufficiently valuable that even if you go into an extreme economic scenario, people find you useful.
Right.
Okay. So, we always heard the story, the depression stories in America. My grandfather was a doctor in Tennessee and nobody had any money, and all of his patients paid him with food. He got eggs, he got chickens, he got, but the family ate all the way through right. the depression. My father had to, he had to get pulled out of a boarding school because he didn't get paid with money. So they had no cash money, but they had tons of food. The kids ate very, very well during the depression
because everybody paid with
eggs and chicken. Yeah. Right.
Right.
So, but it was because everybody needed a doctor. He was useful. He was important. He was, he was valued by the community. And it's funny because I have different subscribers and clients who are are nurses or doctors, and they're really, really good. And what I've told them is, the demand for your services are just going to go right. up. So you have to manage your practice in that,
right.
To that curve. But don't worry about what's going to happen, because the society right. around you is always going to need you and find you useful.
That's a good way of looking at your learning plan, is assessing your real value add in a situation like that.
Right.
How can you really be of value?
Right.
When a world like the Great Depression and the years after that occurs.
One of the most interesting things that happened to me as an investment advisor was the clients who were the most nervous were the ones who had so much money that they had retired and they weren't doing anything useful for anybody else, and they were scared to death because they were entirely dependent on the financial system.
Yeah.
Whereas the ones right. who had a lot of wealth but kept working, they felt needed, and that gave them security.
Right. And they're flexible. They can, if you're dependent on this one pension pot of money that's fixed, a fixed income yield of, say, a couple thousand a month, which would be enough to live by.
Right.
What if you get high inflation? And right. that just gets eaten away. But if right. you're flexible and you can switch your business model and go into a different alley of the corporate world, then you can invest.
So the second thing to do with inflation is you want to do everything. So revenues, you want to have an inelastic demand, is what right. it's called. In your expenses, you want to be as resilient as possible and be able to lower your overhead. I would much, I constantly tell the story of the client who complained about her water bills going up and the yields on her stock portfolio were going down. I said, this is simple. Sell your stock, build a well. And if you look at your overhead and you think, how many things can I invest in, whether it's my own water system, my own energy system, my own garden, my own, land that I lease to the farmer down the road, how can I constantly invest in things that permanently lower my expenses? Not lower your quality of life, not lower your comfort, right. but and you can do that locally in a way that improve your result. So you're going to get a better quality of food. You're going to get right. a better quality of water. You're going to get So part of this is trying to up the quality at the same time you reduce permanently. You know, I know a lot of people have gone out and bought wooden stoves, you know,
yeah.
or right. So there's a lot you can do to, you know, permanently lower your overhead and to live very modestly in a way that's very, very comfortable. The big one, of course, is, for God's sakes, become your own doctor. Learn how to do preventative health. You know, avoid all these different things that bankrupt families. And, of course, you know, look at the shot. Everybody, if we look at the rise in all-cause mortality and the death and disability that came from the shot, you're talking about thousands of families that have been millions of families that have been bankrupted or seriously harmed.
Yeah.
So if you look at people who took the shot versus didn't take the shot and what it did to their family wealth, I dare say the people who didn't take the shot, whether their mind is clearer, their body's healthier, and they don't have all those healthcare expenses, or they can keep working, they're in a much better financial situation generally than the ones who did.
Yes.
Right. So
yes,
that's why it's so important to protect yourself against the great poisoning. Other things you can do with inflation is, I love the idea of buying the old car, because if you get the old car and you get it fixed up properly, much lower maintenance, much lower maintenance, especially if you can find a great. Another thing when it comes to local investment is invest in the capacity that you need. You know, so for example, after I moved to Hickory Valley, I found a great local auto mechanic. Half the price of taking it to the Nissan, you know, first of all, it takes an hour to get to the Nissan place to get it fixed. But if I take it locally, then it's half the price. You know, that's the kind of thing where it's not a bad idea to find a local kid, set them up in business to refurbish old cars. You know, invest in the businesses that you need. Then you have that capacity. So anything you can do on your, then when it comes to assets, invest in assets that do well in an inflation. So, you know, the idea of 2 years ago buying fixed income with a yield of 1%, when they're injecting all that money on the going direct, you know that's going to end badly. And, of course, look at all the banks. They have investment portfolios that are sucking wind. So now, at the same time, if you look at interest rates running up, when you could buy a treasury at 5% or a good corporate bond at 5%, there was an opportunity to lock that in. So anyway, so it's. There's no magic bullet, because the thing we're fighting is this. The central banks print money, give it to the insiders, and then do things to shut down your business or disadvantage you. And that's why ultimately there is no solution in your personal financial situation. We're going to have to organize and work to create the conditions to permanently change this.
Right.
I mean, we have a political problem and there's no financial solution. So
also invest in the leadership that's fighting for preserving your financial transaction freedom.
Right. So our number one target for the year is to support the leaders who are fighting for financial transaction freedom.
Yes.
Because if we don't have financial transaction freedom, it doesn't matter what you invest in. They're going to take everything. They're going to take your real estate. They're going to take your precious metals. They're going to take your securities. They're going to take your kids. They're going to take everything.
Shut you out of your bank account. Reduce your liquidity, you're just not able to transact.
Right. It's a question of when. So,
Catherine, you make a really good point. When we talk about investing, financial investing, we generally don't think about giving money away. And, you know, whether it's a charitable organization and you get a tax deduction, or it's investing in, you know, an attorney who's doing great things pro bono. There are just so many people who are doing wonderful things. Maybe it's investing in a Substack of someone who's really communicating good ideas. So thinking in terms of putting some portion, I know that you're into tithing and, you know, you can think of tithing just generally rather than specifically with religious organizations, but putting aside some money for giving to causes and people who are really contributing to the health and welfare of the people around us and the people we love.
Our first crowdfund was, we did a crowdfund for Dr. Farrell's organ and had a blast. That was so much fun. and we had great subscribers. I'll never forget one guy from Silicon Valley. He wanted to put up the match, and he said, I'm sending you the check now. I said, don't you want to wait until I get the, you know, I raise the money to match your match? He said, oh, no, I feel much safer with you having out here in Silicon Valley. It was funny. But so we did that, and then we did the Take Action crowdfund, and now we're converting the Take Action crowdfund to the financial transaction and to focus on helping leaders do financial transactions. But yeah, giving can really help. I did want to mention, I want to talk about a couple of times when, you know, because you and I this afternoon talked a lot about, okay, over, you know, working with hundreds of people on their investments, where did people make money and where did they lose money?
Right.
And one of the things I have to tell you, looking back over all those years, the way people make money is by building a skill, building a product or a service. You know, it could be a very successful author who writes books and builds a brand. So it's a product, service, and a brand, or it's a business, or it's a bank.
Right.
And they spend years and years and years, oftentimes it's a family, building a great business that provides a useful service. And it's hard work. You know, and that's why it's so important to have a passion.
Yeah, passion, yes.
Right. But what I've seen is when you have a family or when you have a group of people who are like a family and they build a business and, you know, it's hard work and it takes many years, but when they do it right, that's how they build real wealth. And I rarely, you know, occasionally I'll see somebody who will do it as an investor investing in sort of other people's enterprises, you know, and there are ways to do that. But the ones who really consistently make the money, they build a skill, they build a product and service and a brand, and they build a business.
And as we just learned, that's much more inflation resilient too.
Right. Right.
Well, and in terms of preparing for great change, which I think there's about 100% chance that there will be great changes in the economy.
There is now.
and there are. One of the best things that you can do if you feel like you're trapped with golden handcuffs in a big corporate job, build some skills so that if that job goes away, you can do something else. And, you know, my son is in the audiovisual field, and I've been talking to him about preparing to go out on his own, doing some of the things he's learning to do in his job and maybe investing in pieces of equipment or taking classes or whatever. And these are things that you can do while you're still trapped with your golden handcuffs with your corporate job or whatever. You're trying to wait out to retirement, and maybe you'll just decide to chuck the security of wanting to get retirement and chuck it and go out and enjoy your life and do something that you really love. But you need to expose yourself to what those things are before you can make that decision.
So the big money was made by building and creating something. Mm. And that's, you know, if you listen to the indoctrinated brain, you know, one of the things that the fear kills is creativity. And clearly building those things requires skills and creativity. Let's talk about some of the, you know, because it was a very common thread how people lost money. They lost money from the fear porn. They lost money from the hope porn. A lot of it was around entrainment. And a lot of it was associating with people who, you know, held themselves out to be on the inside. Right. I'm an insider. So, you know, I watched people lose money on Madoff. A lot of people who lost money on Madoff came and got me to clean up, help them clean up. Ultimately, what came out is if you look at who got them into Madoff, you know, it was a combination of low integrity people who are promising you an insider. You're getting a special insider deal.
So these things take time to build up. So when you hear the fear-driven, high urgency, make a move now and make a lot of money, don't fall for that.
So
right? That's what you're saying.
You want to avoid fear, and you want to avoid. You want to avoid fear. You want to avoid the magic black box. I can't tell you what's in it. It's a magic black box. Mm. He has a system. If you can't understand it, there's something wrong.
Right.
If you don't understand how that technology works, it's wrong. You know, many, many times I've gotten on the phone and I'm getting a heavy sale and I'm just, you know, I'm just saying, you know, I can't understand it. I can't, you got to explain it to me. If you can't understand it, don't do it. So another is getting intellectual mastery. The third is the get rich quick. And the, you know, and I can't tell you how many people I've seen just make terrible, terrible mistakes doing that. Another one, and there are exceptions to this rule, is diversification. Right. Putting a lot of money in something, sometimes because of fear, sometimes because of the big prophecy. Oh, the dollar's going to collapse, and you have to bet the ranch on the dollar's going to collapse. And so sometimes it's prophecy. But but don't put a lot of money into something. You know, and I told you stories of people who broke that rule and lost tremendous amounts of money because they had more in something. You know, they put a lot more in a private illiquid investment on the theory that they were going to get above market yield. And, you know,
next thing you know, they lose everything.
They lose everything.
Right. Are there any businesses or lines of business that throughout the ages have been proven to be a successful avenue of building wealth in?
Yeah, so new technology applied to something essential. So when you take new technology, so new energy technology, and you apply it to real estate in a way that permanently saves maintenance costs,
right?
You know, and you do it faster and better than anybody else, you get. Now, what you have to be careful of, and this is what Charlie Stevens covered on the 21st century approach to energy. If your new approach and new technology, and this is what we did at Hamilton Securities, you know, sort of power shifts the current players in the market, they will use political means to attack you. Right. Okay. So we totally power shifted the whole yield curve in distressed assets at Hamilton. We found new ways of bidding things, a new way of doing things. They completely power shifted the market. And so the players who organized and said, okay, you know, we're going to kill that. So, but generally when you apply new technology to an essential function in a way that creates more value, you know, that's how you build a product or service or enterprise that really does well.
Are you seeing any specific areas in 2024 that provide those conditions?
Theoretically, yeah. So for example, doing high quality agriculture with, you know, if you look at what you can do with robotics applied to agriculture or just robotics applied to everybody having their own garden, you know, gardening and agriculture can be very, especially biodynamic organic, can be very labor intensive. If you look at some of the innovations that the Dutch farmers did that Else von Hemelin talks about for, you know, floor, you know, sea floor fishing, you know, incredible stuff and very productive, which is why the government had to stop it.
Right.
So they needed to sneak around. They needed to figure out a sneak around system. But
well, they needed the breeding grounds, if you want to call it, the breeding waters for windmills.
Right.
So, of course, you need to bully out all the fishermen.
Right. Or if you look, you know, right now what's happening, there is a revolution in material sciences. And I was just meeting with an entrepreneur who started a business using graphene to build new materials in ways that could be very, very, you know, just tremendous productivity. Right. And you know, because there is a very important revolution in material sciences. And that's where if you can figure it out, I think there's tremendous opportunities. Right. Because if you look at some of the material sciences, you know, there's still a learning curve. It still hasn't gone up the S-curve. But as it goes up the S-curve, it's going to be explosive.
There was one company you and I looked at last year, which builds 3D printing machines that you can ship off into space.
Right.
And then you don't have to do all the expensive in and out. Right. You just have to ship the raw materials and you can do the printing in space.
Right. The economics of 3D printing, so where you can do, there's so many places where in manufacturing if you can make a prototype easily, cheaply, as you can with 3D printing, you can dramatically improve the manufacturing process. It's very exciting what can happen. So I really do think there's, between the changes in material science and some of the new technology, there's a revolution that is underway, and you combine it with AI, and it's gonna create fantastic opportunities. There's always opportunity. Right. I mean, there's always opportunity. One of my favorite stories during the Great Depression is Encyclopedia Britannica was a company that, do you know what it was?
I do not.
Do you know?
No.
Do you know what an encyclopedia is?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So you would get this, I don't know how many there were. They're like, you know, 12 to 24 books. And it would be like an almanac. It would be, you know, an encyclopedia of all the information in the world. And when I was a kid, I used to sit and just read the Encyclopedia Britannica the way I read the almanac now. And it was fabulous. It was a great resource. And we didn't have the internet then. So you had, family had to have an encyclopedia. Okay. So Encyclopedia Britannica became very successful during the Depression because so many companies and universities laid off all these brilliant people with great educations. So they hired them all as door-to-door salesmen. You know, because they were on commission. And they built a company, and then after the Depression ended, they stayed. And they ended up having this phenomenally high quality, you know, high intellectual workforce that really made the company. And so for many, many years, it was successful because of, you know, they had taken advantage of the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when things change, some things lose their economic power, but they're new.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why I come back to the learning plan. Okay. So you developed the learning plan. We published it the last time we did this on the quarterly wrap up. And you're working on applying your learning plan. But when things are changing like this, you have to systematically make an effort to learn.
Do a revision every year and then see whether your skill set is still applicable in the coming environment.
And the answer is no. It's always got to be refresh. Right. It's always got to be, you just got to keep on learning. And that's where teaming up with other people, whether it's a family or a Soleri circle, and trying to make, you know, because on the Soleri team, we have different people. So Carolyn's doing Tech Corner. You know, what we decided to do at the last week of the month when we didn't do Ask Catherine, Carolyn is always saying, I don't understand technology. How am I supposed to do this or that? We have other people on the team who are very high tech. So we decided Carolyn would take one of the high tech people and answer all the tech questions.
I ask the dumb questions and they answer them. Therefore, I learn and I share my learning with our subscribers.
Yeah. And we have a very, you know, we have a very wide range in terms of technical ability in the subscribers. Anyway, so you know, and thank God for the Soleri team, because trying to keep up with the new technology is just
it's tricky.
It takes a conspiracy.
Right. Right. And effective communication.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see on financial equity. I do think it is very, very important. One of the things we've got down here is savings plan.
Yes.
So I think being very disciplined about it, it makes sense to have a budget. It makes sense for a family to have a budget. It's a way of understanding what things cost you. And it's very good to have, you know, I believe in tithing, but also in saving. Right. So every, you know, we have a screen. We have the screen does, among other things, we work with a money manager's got a fund. Every month I send $500 into the fund. And you know, I'm trying to talk you into starting an account called The Beautiful Game, where we find stocks that we really love.
Yes.
And it's funny, when you know a company, so I'm thinking of one stock that we really love. Hmm. And when you know that company and you have a real sense for their business, when their stock's down, you're like, good.
Yeah.
A sale. It's great. You know,
because you play the long game.
Right.
And you want to be part of that business. You want to support them.
Right.
And it feels good to invest your money in those companies because you want to see them grow.
Right. But you also believe in them.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So on the savings plan, this is on growing. This is on the offensive. This is on the offense.
Right.
On the defense, on the expense side, what I look at with saving is, for example, Christmas expenses. Every year on Christmas, you spend a couple hundred bucks on gifts, or right. a couple thousand if you're really high net worth, or a right. couple tens of dollars. It doesn't matter. Right. But every year around Christmas, you spend about the same amount of money every year.
Well, you know, in the I don't know if they have in the Netherlands, you have Christmas savings plans.
Right.
So kids can open a savings account.
Oh,
at
they
the
do.
Local bank. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've never seen
and
that.
And save for Christmas.
That is fantastic.
And did you ever use a Christmas savings account, Carolyn?
No, but I certainly am aware of them. Yeah. I always make my gifts, so it's a matter of justifying buying more yarn so I can knit something for people. So.
But these are, you can expect that every single year they will show up, these costs. And the same right. thing with car maintenance. You know that certain things will pop up at around 100,000 kilometers. I don't know what that equates to in miles exactly, but at certain points of the car's life, there will be expected costs. So I know a guy who, he built this model where he just injects the amount of kilometers or miles he drives, and then the model spits out, oh, you have to save this amount of money this year because these costs are coming up.
Right.
And then you're never surprised unless something happens, of course,
right.
but generally you have a good expectation that meets reality.
Right. Budgeting works.
Yes.
Budgeting works, and it gets you to be conscious. Using cash works. That gets you right. to be conscious too. So budgeting and
as quote unquote simple as they might look, these tricks really, really work. These tactics.
They work.
They do.
There, if you look at the books for the year, every year we publish a list of books for the next year. And the books for 2023 were published last year. We're going to do 2024. We'll publish later this month. And in there are several books on financial planning right. or investment. You know, I have to tell you, I find the Four Dummy books great. So
they're surprisingly good.
Right.
Yes.
Right. But if you have problems with one of the systems I like, he's very commercial now, is Dave Ramsey. You know, he'll do an envelope system where you have to get all the cash and put it in the envelopes. And then it's a good discipline.
Which is part of the tactic with getting rid of cash, of course. Getting people to spend more because you don't feel the impact. And if
right.
you have those dollar bills stacked in your wallet and
right.
handing them out, you know,
right.
it's a bit more painful.
Right.
Maybe you budget a bit more accurately then.
One thing, two other comments on financial equity. If you can find, it depends on how much money you have, but at a certain point, if you can find a good financial planner, it's really a good financial planner, a good attorney, and a good CPA, and a good bank make a huge difference.
Right.
And two equity overviews ago, we did an interview with Tim Caban about how to find all the different financial professionals. And it's hard. It's hard to find a financial planner who really understands what's going on in the world, or an asset manager who really understands what's going on in the world. But you can do it, and it's worth doing if you above a certain net worth, right. I would say. So I would really encourage you to do that. The other thing is, many people have not been interested in the financial world because they found the corruption very offensive, and some of the attitudes very offensive. And I really want to encourage them. They can get intellectual mastery
right.
of how the whole financial area works, and they can be good at their own finances. Right. But it is a matter of committing a certain amount of time and really going at it in a disciplined way.
Right.
Reading, studying, just go on a learning journey and just understand that over many years, you really can get intellectual mastery. And that way you can be a very discerning customer.
Right. And ask the stupid questions, like you said, Carolyn.
Right.
Ask the stupid questions and don't be afraid to do so. It will only benefit you in the long run.
If you want to have fun, and I can't imagine this coming up anytime soon, but get in a room with Carolyn and me. Carolyn, remember when we faced down the 10 lawyers?
Oh, yeah.
You'll have fun.
All right, so we've spoken about living equity and financial equity and how to get, a vision, a map, and manage the risk to be able to
right.
to keep it once you've built it.
Right. I'm looking at the stories. I wanted to mention one other thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Playing the dividend game.
Right. Important one.
If you're in the equity markets, you know, if you look at the very long term,
right,
it's all about dividends. And if you look at some of the people who do really well, they buy a stock that produces a good dividend and a growing dividend, and then they just hold and hold and
never
hold and
sell.
Hold and hold and hold. And if you look at their returns as the dividend grows on their original principal, returns are phenomenal. Now, it looks very sort of utilitarian and boring. It's not exciting like a big momentum stock.
Right.
But, you know, they miss out on the pump and dumps, and they're just getting that dividend.
Yeah.
Right.
And once you get to a certain position, you can live off the dividends or spend the dividends on certain things in your life. So you can use the yield on that investment for specific purposes.
Don't be afraid of good old boring understandable investments with no magic that produce good dividends.
Right.
Okay.
Any other story you would like to?
Yeah. So I also want to talk about insurance.
Okay.
Because insurance is a complex, tricky subject, but you can use insurance to protect yourself from a lot of dirty tricks and trouble.
Right.
So. We know with the family financial disclosure form we did for COVID, you know, we said, if you can't talk your spouse out of taking the injection, then make sure there's disability insurance and life insurance so that the death or disability of a spouse does not convert into a family bankruptcy. Protect yourself against bankruptcy.
You hedge the worst case.
Right. And I've been very lucky. I've had very good at home insurance and I haven't had many problems, but when I have paid right away, no problems.
Right.
You know, so having good insurance advice and knowing how to use insurance is important. I'm not a big fan of annuities and insurance investment products because generally I find with many of those products, you can keep control and, for example, build a high-quality fixed income portfolio that produces the equivalent of your own annuity and you control, and if you need to sell, you can, and no big fees. So I do think part of being great at financial and building financial equity is not knowing how to manage your emotions. So I mentioned the book before by Monty, which I love, called Behavioral Investing. And it's all about, you know, learning how to approach this. You know, investment is a process. And you have to not let your emotions. Most of the losses I see come from not knowing how to manage your emotions.
Right.
And getting your emotions played and getting your emotions
selling
tricked. Selling at the low, buying at the high. I told you the story earlier of the client I had, and he bought a big position of gold, right? It was about 354, I think. 354 an ounce. Remember those days. And I had prepared him for how volatile. I said, just understand, you know, we could buy and the next day could, well, we did. We bought. It was very important to me to get him in under 400, and because the price was going up. We buy in, big position for him, first position, wham, down 20%. And I had really made him study and be prepared, and he didn't sell. He didn't get afraid. His friends tried to convince him I was a scam artist.
Right.
And, you know, so I remember when we hit 1600, we were laughing, you know. He was laughing. He was like, remember when we thought 20% down at 354 was a problem? So,
but imagine that guy went emotional and sold.
Right. Right.
Well, the other thing that's important is not to take too big a step at one time. You know, when you were talking about investing every month, that is a way of getting into the market in a less risky way because you're not buying at the bottom or the top because you're buying every month. It works the same way selling. Yeah. If you decide to take everything out of the stock market and put it in Bitcoin all at one time,
right?
Not a good idea.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Put it in anything all at one time.
Right.
Unless it's farmland that will feed you.
Right. Rural Tennessee.
Right.
This is not investment advice. Do your own research.
Do your own research. So back to the scenario plans we started. We said there are four scenario plans. The other thing is never bet the ranch on one prediction of the future. So
exactly. No prophecies.
No prophecies. Start, You're responsible. Your choice in a free and inspired life is to invent your future.
Right.
And to invent a successful future, no matter what is going on. You know, in this environment, it requires caring about what's going on, because you've got to make a contribution to that if we're all going to be free. But you've got to be part of being resilient and building what you want is understanding lots of different scenarios are possible. Do not bet the ranch on some prophecy of the future, like dollar collapse or this or that. You've got to be prepared to be effective in multiple right. scenarios. Because we could go into hyperinflation, we could go to a serious deflation.
Well, and you can create your own scenario plans using this quadrant vehicle and put in different scenarios.
And or probabilities.
Say, am I prepared for any of these outcomes? And if not, you know, what are the chances that that's going to happen and I'm going to be caught with my pants down?
Okay, so now we go to my favorite pillar.
Your favorite
number
pillar.
Six, number
turtle
six.
Fourth. And you've said before, 2024 will be a doozy of a year.
So how get casual. Ready to hunker down and turtle.
Turtle fourth, yeah. So how do we do that? How do we stay grounded enough and productive enough?
It's a faith.
Turtle fourth every day.
You have to have faith. The key to success is never quitting. It's continuous learning, it's continuous improvement, and never quitting. And I can't, you know, and Carolyn's seen this, I can't tell you how many times I've been in a situation that's been informed by all the smartest people that it's totally hopeless. And then you just say, well, I just never, I'm not
right.
quitting.
Right.
And then a miracle happens yeah. and something, you know, so you never know in this world. You just never know.
Mm-hmm.
And what, if you look at all the great successes I've seen people achieve in terms of building real wealth, you know, yeah, you can hook up with Mr. Global and get, you know, get the miracle bestowed on you. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about building real fundamental right. economic value that translates into wealth for you. You know, they are hardworking, continuous learning people who never, ever, right. ever quit. I've never met a successful family enterprise that didn't have an amazing story of people
right.
who did quit through thick or thin, up and down. No. You know, some of my favorite people are in the oil patch, and it's because it's such a volatile business. One day you're a multimillionaire, the next day you're broke, the next day you're a multimillionaire, and it gives them a perspective. You know, the money is their servant. They're not the money's servant.
Exactly.
And they know how to use money strategically as a tool to build, you know, a piece mm-hmm. on the monopoly board, to get a piece on the to get a strategic position. And, you know, and they're marvelous people to be with because they really understand how the world works.
Is that where there seems to be such a push to push people into a very secular or nihilistic life where they don't believe in anything higher than themselves? They don't serve anything higher than themselves. So you start and serve the money.
Right.
The materialistic.
Right. Right. And they become a servant of money instead of money as their servant. Right. And that's where culture comes in. You have to have the values
yes.
so that servant, the money is a tool that serves you, not vice versa.
In Turtling Forth, Catherine, we have to tell the story of Marcus Aurelius. Because he, as the emperor of Rome, being... Right. stabbed in the back, surrounded by bribery and corruption, in the middle of a plague, right. decided that every single day he was going to write in his journal.
Right.
Never knowing that a couple hundred thousand and something odd years later, we would be reading his book.
Right. Right. Imagine how many copies of that book sold.
Right. Close to 2,000 years.
One of my favorite Christmas stories is Harper Lee. Was an author in New York, struggling. She's working in a travel agent. And she had two friends who had a very successful year in their business. And they gave her as a Christmas present a check for the amount of money she needed to pay her rent mm-hmm. and eat and live for a year. And she then wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, which since then has sold 40 million copies.
Wow. That's an investment in the People Bank.
Right. Right.
That's an investment right. in People Bank right there.
Right. Anyway, but Marcus knew, you know, it yeah. was every day he he wrote, and you never know. I mean, think of all the resources and wealth he dealt with and managed, and yet it was his diary that he wrote every day that turned out to be the greatest part of his legacy. So,
right. And it's a treasure to be able to read that now.
Right. But it comes because you just, you know, you never know. You know, in Hickory Valley, our mayor, who also owns the Hickory Valley Cotton Gin, every Sunday at church would get up and he would read a scripture before the pastor gave the sermon. And the first thing he would say in his deep Southern accent is, just remember, something good's going to happen to you today.
I like
it. And that's the faith.
Yeah.
That's the faith that you can build wealth.
Yeah.
You know, so I was brought up to believe I was a wealth builder. I had the power. I had the training. I had the skills to build wealth.
Yes.
I had that power. And anybody can do that. But you have to start with the choice. I'm going to be a wealth builder.
Right.
And you look around the world and you say, okay, I'm going to build wealth.
You have to flesh out a vision.
Right.
That you are going to be a wealth builder.
Right.
And go and spend every minute of your life in that mindset. Surround yourself with people that embrace that.
And I'm not saying I'm going to make money.
Right. Wealth.
You need to cover
Living
your expenses.
Financial.
So you need to cover your expenses. So I'm not saying money isn't important. But I'm talking about building equity. And sometimes it translates into financial equity. And sometimes it translates into living equity. And sometimes it just turns into a bad idea that was humiliating.
A lesson.
It turns into a lesson. Okay. And turtling is recognizing it as a lesson and keep on going.
So,
right.
So may we learn many lessons in 2024.
I am sure we
will. Build wealth and do it together.
Yes.
Any closing thoughts, Carolyn?
It all boils down to faith and love.
Yes.
Amen to that.
Right. Right. There's no such thing as too much love.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, get together and do some serious scenario planning for 2024. Flesh out that vision and go hammer at it every single day, because you can do it.
Yes, they can.